That will call the meeting to order.
And entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
So
moved and seconded by, Ms. Grumman, seconded by Mr. Roslin. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say no. The agenda is approved. And you should have the minutes from the, I sent the base document. The attachment is that pile of slides, which looks like this that we had from last time. So that's all. That's online. So I entertain a motion to approve the minutes from May 25th, moved by Mr. McElhaney, and second by Mr. Andrus. So all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Okay, and then we talked. We had a short meeting before with the sheriff and the good folks from EKV and our GF consultant, Alan Brinkman. And by the way, Alan, that's Alma Brinkman, the chairman of the commission.
Well, I gotta shake his hand. Two Brinkmans in one room, we dominate. Like
that. Wait, there's a majority here tonight.
Oh, okay.
You want to do that?
Before we get started, yeah. Since we have a substitute secretary, so Cindy Brugman, the auditor, is here graciously providing her expertise and services. But we since the secretary is an appointed position on the committee, we probably should temporarily appoint her. So I'd entertain a motion to temporarily appoint for this meeting Cindy Brugman as the secretary.
So
moved. Mr. Watson, second by Mr. Quaiston. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Okay. Congratulations.
Thank you.
This is a special moment. Yeah. Have some cheese and crackers. Yeah, we talked about switching items 3 and 4 around on the agenda just to get number 4 out of the way, because we've talked a lot about jail space programming, and there should be a fresh one on your... Yeah, this is it. I got it on my computer. Yeah. So it's this thing here. So Bruce, if I could hand it over to you, and then so we talked. Basically, we're talking about the basic floor space footprint for the jail and the sheriff's office.
Exactly. So good evening, everybody. It's good to see y'all. When we go through space programming on all the projects we do, all the government and justice type facilities that we do, correctional projects, there's kind of a standard process for identifying space operational requirements. And we do it based on the various individual areas, whether it's a cell, whether it's an office, whether it's a meeting room, whether it's a booking area. All of them have certain kind of standards that are somewhat nationally kind of typical. I don't know if there's anything you want to jump in there. So we start with those averages, and then we meet with the sheriff, we meet with the various departments, and kind of go through those to identify any nuances that are specific to that department. So from the last program we did, you'll see that up on the board there, the NSF stands for net square footage. So when you're not taking the exterior perimeter walls, the stairwells, some of those other factors of a building that are required to create a building that's been usable space. And the gross square footage then is the overall. You're basically going to the perimeter of the building, and you're going by the whatever floors, whatever number are needed. So you see we've identified in the program the jail summary. We added from last time future jail summary, court summary, and sheriff's operations. So to reiterate a little bit, the jail summary, when we met last time, we talked about 120 beds with the ability to expand 16 beds. And we just went back and forth about, well, it's 136 for the long term of the county, and we're talking 50, 60, 70 years, whatever. One of your primary site criteria is long-term expansion. So we've now identified the potential to go 36 beds in the future. Again, giving you, not saying you're building any of that right away, but at least giving you the capability for long-term expansion. The last thing you want to do, you box yourself in, we don't think about it, and now you've got a facility that, 20, 30 years out, what are we going to do now? So we're thinking about it to identify that.
Quick question.
Yes, sir.
So is that 120 plus 16 plus 36?
No. It's about 120 plus 32. So 216 bed units. Okay. And you'll see that.
And then plus the booking.
Well, the booking, again, is additional cells that are used.
Yeah, it's not in the bed count.
Yeah, so there are five cells in all. There are five cells in the booking area. that can be used for juvenile that typically are they're the turnover cells. You've got people coming in and out, so you're really not using them as a housing unit. It's really the space you need to classify, to separate for the short-term holders, the book and release kind of stuff. So, the jail summary, everything you see in this document and everything you've gotten that's been highlighted or shaded is changes from what we from when we, our last meeting back in May. And we wanted to make sure you were aware of those changes. So, this is the summary sheet. The court's summary is still the carryover of the information we saw in the National Center of State Courts program. We looked at that. We all agreed on that way back when. You all accepted that. So, we put it there. The sheriff's operations, there's some nuances that we'll get into a little bit. But again, what we're showing for roughly 24,000 square feet of operational space, including the requirements for the garage, even though we do have one question, Sheriff, that we did forget to ask earlier, that probably was a result of our experience today, but we have to talk about that a little bit as well. And I can say it real quick now, is there need to have any garage space for the highway patrol? Or do they just park outside?
They would say, I'm sure it would be nice to have, but what I would say is that probably given the amount of space that's right now in the plan, we would be able to share.
We'd be able to share some. Okay, good. So I'm going to go through these briefly just to show you. So the first one was this, what we showed is the future cells and the future beds. And so this wasn't identified before, but this is that future two units of 16 beds each. The eight cells and double bunk to 16. And this was a summary of those jail units that showed the 120. And the yellow there in all those various housing units, basically, when we first met, or when we first talked about it, we've been going along and talking about the American Correctional Association, the ACA standards. ACA are good national standards. To start with that as really a baseline. And there's a number of reasons to use that as a baseline. The size of the cell, when you talk about ACA standards, they talk about unencumbered area. So it increases the size of the cell slightly. If you go to more of what we've done in Minnesota, which Minnesota standards talk about a 70-square-foot cell. They draw a baseline of 70 feet. What we do as a good practice is most of the time our cells end up being close to the 80 square feet plus or minus. So in this program, we've actually reduced those cell sizes down from 85 to 80. Minor nuances in the program like that are small kind of touches. The big picture really is back here. That's the overall planning. Now, we go through these steps to understand as we start to do planning concepts, what is appropriate for the size of your justice facilities? How big should the court be, which you've already gone through? How big should the jail be? How big should the sheriff's operations be? And again, we've compared those against other facilities we do to make sure they're in line with what we've done before. As we start to test these on various sites, now we know the areas that we are dealing with to start to see, will it fit on this site? We've got a square footage that we can start to put and test on those sites. We also use this square footage because when you do master planning studies, you're doing cost analysis of similar facilities based on the size of the facilities. So it's a good starting point because we'll use these square footages and the types of space to do an assessment of what the potential cost could be. We have, and at this point you don't do it, but as you get into the project further, if we find that there's a fine line, or a certain number, and we're trying to achieve it, sometimes there's the ability to slim things down. We had a project in Illinois recently where we were able to take literally 4 inches out of the various offices and kind of take these slivers of space out that really didn't negatively impact it, and we were able to save almost 1,000 square feet. So there's those types of things you can do, but that comes much later and really once you're developing the project. So there's opportunities for those things. Also, I'd like to say, too, is this is a big picture number that puts you in the range of an appropriate facility. Once you actually start to put the rooms together, start to lay out all the components of a true building, you're hoping to achieve some level of efficiency. So the goal is, this is the big number, you're trying to, through planning, when you move to the next phase of project development, whether it's schematic design, design development, really moving the project forward, you're hoping you can get a little efficiency, but this puts you in a good ballpark. So, the summary, the various GR components. Those are all highlighted because we went from the 85 square feet per cell to an 80 square feet per cell. These visitation areas, maintenance and storage, all standard areas that are typical. And if anybody's got any questions, let me know.
Yeah, I do.
Yes, sir.
Wow. Is there a possibility of having dual-purpose cells so population changes?
That's a very good question. So right now we've laid out 12 housing units, 12 small pods. The reason that works well is that gives you a lot of flexibility for the types of individuals you're dealing with. We've done Douglas County Youth Court, for example. Douglas County had a large direct supervision pod, general population direct supervision pod. The people that are housed in that have to basically be of a certain classification that can be used in that. But it's a large chunk of space with a large number of units. They also have they have one SEG unit. Oh, off the top of my head, I'm trying to remember if it was 5/5 or 4/4. They have another small unit. So they basically have four pods to handle, I think we're close to 150 beds.
No, something like that, 140 something.
I mean, that was my project I worked on, so I'm trying to remember from memory. It's been a few years. But it was about 150 with four pods. The potential problem with that is if you don't have a lot of females, say you have a housing unit. I think Al might have talked about this a little bit last time. If you have one unit with eight beds in it, you've got one female, well, you've got to house her somewhere, and now you potentially are housing her in an eight-bed unit, so now you've got seven beds that are basically not being utilized because you've got to have that woman by herself. You've got somebody that's violent. And really can't be around other inmates. I mean, really has to be secluded. Again, that could cause the ability you can't double bunk the space that we plan on double bunking, or other issues with other spacing. So right now with your 12 units, which each one of these, each one of the units, this is going to be way too small for me to see. I need bigger glasses.
Which pages?
if you were to go to page.
To add to Bruce's question, every one of the units are 100% interchangeable. So minimum, medium, max, male, female, predator, prey, you name it. You can move them around. The jail administrator has the ability to use each and every one. It was two meetings ago where we determined not to have a larger work release center. I think, I'm talking with the sheriff and the jail administrator. We had a 26-bed work release unit, and with the numbers you had, it didn't justify leaving that many beds sitting empty, so that's where it went from 8 units to 12 units. So we are 100, when you ask about functional flexibility, every one of them can be used interchangeably. They are sight and sound separated, so you can have the females, the males, and, meet the needs of a true classification.
Does that help?
Yep.
I was wondering, you went from 85 square feet down to 80 for each
cell. Each standard cell. We also have ADA cells in there too that are a little bit larger than 90
right.
square feet.
But now, what was recommended? You said the American or the association. What do they recommend?
So the ACA talks about unencumbered space.
Yeah.
And it's actually in that roughly 85 square foot range.
Okay.
So when we say unencumbered, just so everybody understands it, when they talk about kind of a minimum clearance, you've got to deduct for your bunk, you've got to deduct for your desk, and you've got to deduct for your toilet in that set. So when they say unencumbered, it's really that's the amount of circulation room the inmate is allowed in addition to those other fixtures within the cell.
Is that 85 for one person or a two-man cell?
Double bunk. Two people.
Okay. Now, if you can drop from 85 to 80, can't you drop down to 70, the Minnesota standards?
Technically, you...
Because we're going to be looking at everything else being up to snuff.
I'll be honest with you. Technically, you can. It gets a little tighter. It does get a little tighter. Think about part of the reason you do that. These individuals can be locked up typically 23 hours a day or more. You're trying to create a situation where it's manageable and not volatile. And sometimes, when we talk about these program spaces and we talk about support spaces for inmates, you got to realize a lot of these people don't want to be there. And the correctional staff can be dealing with volatile situations. When you allow them a little bit of these, and I don't want to call them comforts, because it's not that, but you allow a little bit of more humane type of ability of space, you're able to control them better. You're able to control the situation better.
So in other words, we're not really looking at the ACA standards anymore. They're kind of whatever we want.
Well, the 85 is truly the ACA standard. Mm-hmm. That would allow us to achieve it. We're dealing with 57 cells, I think, at the top of my head. So 57 times 5 is about 285. Am I right?
Yeah. You said about 300,000.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're talking about, the reality is we're talking like this 300 square foot differential.
Right.
In a master plan, it's, you all could come back tomorrow and say, you know what, we feel better with the ACA standard. And it wouldn't have a big project impact. It is a small dollar amount, but it's not a big project impact. So that's something that's important to discuss. And, you know, there's other nuances of whether there's a shower in the cell versus out of the cell. Those are all planning aspects that this program gets
right.
you in the range,
right.
and then you go from there.
But I'd say 300,000 is quite a bit, even in a overall picture. But anyway, that's all right. Let's go on with that.
I didn't say 300,000.
Well, the
analysis I did the other day, and I
he didn't see that email yet.
I just mean,
you know, former meeting you had said about about 300,000.
It was a rough guess.
Yeah.
It was a rough guess. So,
but that's, we can just go on with the meeting. You've answered my question.
Yeah. And just so you can see for a second, not to go back too far, but just to show you
one thing, could you comment on? No, Minnesota hasn't had any problems with their standards. Now the jail we saw in Alexandria was basically what you're describing,
correct?
With about an 80 square footish cell.
There we go. So there's a cell configuration that we've done on a lot of Kelly facilities, and when we, you know, there's desk, there's built-in desk, there's welded-in stools, there's the bunks where they sleep, there's the toilet. You know, in this particular one, we've done shower fixtures within the cell. So when you talk the uncovered, it's any of that area that's not taken up by these elements.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Computer locked off. I love that one. This one?
Yeah, workshop 3.
Oh, wrong one. This one. Yep. So, to go back to this briefly and kind of shoot through it, again, I think what you see is you'll see the program spaces. The cells are the primary ones. It changed. This is where we added those two units, the future units. We identified that as those two future pods. In the sheriff's operation, the only thing we've changed is in the last comments. Oh, I can see. Oh,
I see.
Well,
I can just
not catch him, or is it not going?
That's the issue. 20 years
ago. There we go. There we go. There we go. You have to work the computer. On this particular one, we added a chief deputy's office and some storage for chief deputy's office that we inadvertently missed in the last one. That needed to be there because it's a staff. It's in the sheriff's operations. General patrol evidence is all, again, evidence is not, believe me, I've done a lot of evidence for facilities. This is not excessively large in any way. It's very, if anything, it's probably a little more small something. Staff support space. This was currently, just everybody knows, there's a 911 backup emergency response and highway patrol, and we actually had missed some area that needed to be in there, so we added that 500 back in. And I think that's about it. So that's the program area.
Okay, so what I have on here is an agenda item to act, possible action to recommend. And the reason I did that was for the court side, the National Center for State Courts there, because it's a little bit simpler, the court pictures are not as detailed as the jail picture. They had a space program in that study, and we recommended that to the commissioners. So kind of to get us to the same level at the jail side, because Mr. Garnos took us through the inmate projections and a rough bed count. I think we just need to say that we're going to characterize this as our initial program. Would that be a fair term to use, the initial jail and law enforcement or the sheriff's office program and recommend that to the commissioners as the initial program. So,
I guess I'm confused. Why did they vary from the ACA standards of 85A?
Was it discussion that this was still an appropriate square foot? But again, that's up to you all to determine if you're really
appropriate by what those. I mean, if we're building off of standards, I mean, I understand Minnesota has different things, different standards, different sizes, but we're not Minnesota. So my question is, why are we varying from the standards?
Well, that was a discussion we went back and forth with in the last couple of meetings. I mean, what are people's thoughts about that? If we go all the way to 85 square feet, and you know that.
I guess I recall in the discussion we were talking two months ago, but in South Dakota, all the facilities that have been built in whatever the last 10, 15 years are following those ACA standards.
We could easily add 285 square feet, or roughly the grossing factor a little bit more. We could easily add that back in. We thought that was the direction of the group at our last meeting, that we could go to that. That's what we thought.
I mean, if it was
smaller than what we've been doing nationally, we probably would have said, well, let's talk a little bit more. But because we've been doing that in others, that's what we thought the problem was.
You've seen it a lot, and Minnesota hasn't had a problem with it. Okay, so.
Again, for that 285 square feet that we're talking about, I'd say go ahead and add it in if that's what you feel more comfortable with at this point. It's an amount of square footage. It's not what I would consider a game breaker for what you're trying to do.
Okay. And you just said...
Well, I just had a sidebar conversation with Al here, and he asked me. And what I had expressed to him is that on the national level, it appears that there's... It's becoming more restrictive on things like space and movement. Certain things such as, for instance, solitary confinement. I mean, that's now being frowned down upon, and you have to give these people space, and you have to make sure that they have contact with other people on a regular basis. So what I explained to Al is I don't see size restrictions getting smaller. I see the push being bigger, and do you want to have a facility that's 20 years old that somebody on the federal level says, no, you've got to make sure you have this much space per inmate, and we're short.
Well, just to kind of put this in the course of process, this is kind of a detail that we don't have to decide at this point. Is that correct, or do you think
if you want to finalize a program,
yes,
you feel better with going with the larger? I'd say approve it based on increasing it to 85 square feet per cell, and we'll issue the revised program.
Is that what everybody thinks?
I'd say leave it like you have it right now.
Okay,
that's my idea. I mean,
okay,
we can go up to 92, but. Or 95 or whatever, but when it's necessary.
Now let me ask you this. This is just kind of a formality for our own process, so we kind of have our milestones in order and things. But if we characterize it as the way it is now, and we say, okay, we would like to go to the 85, to the ACA, is that, how much of a kerfuffle is that going to cause us? It's not going to...
From this, it's minor.
Okay.
Very minor. It's
minor.
Okay. Again, the basis is, you know, using and approving the square footages here to then apply them to the sites.
Okay.
Making sure we've got that. That 200, that 300 square feet is, is
well, why don't
nothing.
We, what?
I guess my feeling is, how do we justify when somebody asks, why did you choose 80? Well, we chose 85 because that's what the standard is, and there's something to back it up on. Why not choose 79? Why not choose 76? Mm-hmm. 85 is a standard that's laid out, and I think there's meat and potatoes behind it to back that up, and that's why I'm a little bit more comfortable putting that number in there than just spitballing a number on the wall.
Well, what?
It's not total spitballing. I would like to say a lot of the other facilities we've done have been white.
And no offense to you. That's absolutely not
it.
But at least, right. But... see where this conversation is going. Totally, all of a sudden, we're going to start.
Yep,
it's going to continue to step down.
If you deviate, I agree. I think it makes sense to step back and say, you know what, let's just add it back and keep it as a standard. I agree with that.
Right.
That way, there's no
question.
Well, let me suggest that we do that. I mean, just as a suggestion for a starting point for discussion, we do that, and then if we get to a point where we say, you know, we really could use that savings from that 285 square feet or the space or whatever it is,
make that adjustment.
But maybe as an initial.
So
I mean, that's my suggestion. If you guys are comfortable with that, I mean, this is initial. This is kind of rough.
Well, no, it's a program, so it's not really rough. It's a square footage for proposed building. Where it's going though is if the county were to approve a project to proceed. Like I said, the budget's going to be based on the numbers of this and the complexities of the sites and the other features that need to be done to it to pull together cost estimates. If you go to the next one, say the project gets approved, say there's something in the county, everybody says, you know what, we agreed to it, we've got to go forward. The first step in the process of a design of a project is what they call schematic design. Schematic design is when you sit down with the user and you start to lay out plans that lay out every space and doorways and windows, and you're actually developing the first level of plans. At that level is really when you have another opportunity, because all the way through designing a building, there's multiple stages to pull back from where you're at. So you have the opportunity as you start planning to say, you know what, we've laid this out. Oh, you know what, we could save 1,000 square feet if we shim some of this out. You can do that as you proceed forward. So this gives a big picture overview of where it might go. And that's really what it's at.
Can it go the other way?
Go up?
Yeah.
Only if you start to have a situation. So this gives a good national standards for space requirements. And we have had it happen before. Can it? We start to lay it out and say, oh, you know, we missed. Matter of fact, we're doing a police station right now where a client suddenly out of nowhere said, we want 1,000 square foot meter. Well, 1,000 square foot meter is a big chunk of a building. So we our responsibility was saying, fine, we could do that. But, you know, we didn't have that in the budget before. So you have to be honest about where you're heading. And so if everybody's comfortable with this, if user, we know that the courts are comfortable with this program because they approved it previously, I think. Hopefully I'm not speaking for any of the judges in
here. I'm the
We've gone through the jail analysis to talk about the number of potential beds. And we've gone through with the sheriff and looked at your previous program analysis to know that we're all on the line with what makes sense. Can there be creep that goes up? If things aren't monitored properly, that does happen. But in our opinion, when we start a project and we go through it, this becomes the Bible. We work to these numbers and say, we're not going to. Okay. Seeing a project go up is never a good idea.
Okay.
At the same time, you know, to add to that, that's the ceiling. That's the glass ceiling. When somebody says, I agree with this square footage, there's no more, well, I'd like to have, could we have, would you add this? From there, you start working backwards. You start chipping away at gross inefficiencies. You know, and you know, the 5 square feet, it's nothing right now. It really is because there's not a layout, there's not a function and flow there. So,
but from an overall standpoint, I think you're right. I think, we stay with the national standard.
If you're comfortable with it,
I think there's always an opportunity to trim later.
I think we had a comment from Mr. Corsi. He's been waiting to say something.
Okay. So, you know, another consideration that we might want to have here is the perception that the taxpayer out there, the voter, is going to see. A lot of people don't like national standards. They say, well, it's just a lot of people that got together and said, well, we need this or we need that. And if we do everything by the national standard, they can say, all right, you got 85 square feet here. Minnesota has 70, and they've never been sued. That looks to me like that national standard is just fluff on it or embellishment. So maybe we, as a selling point, maybe we ought to back off from that high. We're still over Minnesota standards. Something to consider if you want to sell the project to the public.
But just so you know, other requirements like area per inmate per day room, a number of plumbing fixtures per inmate, a day room space based on overall sizes. What we're doing right now is just good practice that meets all of those.
I agree.
I think the only deviation we're talking about is the cell size.
Right. And I agree, because then you can say, hey, we backed off on the cell size. We're not trying to build a palace here for the inmates. This is minimum, could be less, but we're opting to give them a little more. Just to...
Okay, so there's ACA standards, and then where the bulk of the facilities in the upper Midwest end up, that kind of tells you something, too.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to look at the ones that you toured. I'm kind of curious to see where some of, that's an easy question that could be answered to.
I think, I don't know about the guys, but we went to Hughes County. Well, some of us have seen Hughes County in the course of, but we saw Dakota County, Nebraska, which was almost a carbon copy, and I know that architect uses ACA standards. I don't remember asking that specific question. I got the impression that Yankton might not be. But we didn't get a good look at those cells because that was the jail wasn't conducive to that, So I think that the newer jails, and would you know anything about Roberts County?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, we worked on
what Roberts.
Roberts was probably right in that 80 and 85. Okay. It's a minute. Well, it's just the other side of Minnesota. But we were using, really, when we did that project, it was really kind of based on a lot of the Minnesota stuff we were doing. It's probably in that 80 to 85 range. But we just found one, too. I mean, that's why there's some level of flexibility, because in the shower ones, where we had the showers, those were close to 96 square feet. And the shower adding, basically that was a 3x3, 9 square foot impact. So
I don't know that we need to get totally hung up on this right now. I mean, the thing that we're looking to is still ACA standards, and then whether we decide to shave a little off the cell, I mean, that's still based on shaving it up of an ACA standard. But
always have the ability to come down. You always have the ability to trim it back.
Okay. So with that in mind, I mean, to keep our options open. It would be good if you guys want to talk about it some more. We probably don't want to belabor this point. If someone's ready to make a motion to go one way or another, let's do it. If not, then we'll
make a motion.
We'll
go with the ACA standards, 85 square feet.
Okay. So basically, Mr. McElhaney's made a motion to go with the space program, but going instead of the 80 square foot, go with the 70 feet of unencumbered space, so 85 square feet total. He meant the ACA standard, so that roughly adds about 285 square feet to the whole.
Well, there's a grossing factor to it. So 285 is directly the cell number.
Okay.
Grossing factor will be up, and I just want to make it clear that it's actually higher, but that's the exact cell number.
Yeah, and the other key part of what we're talking about is not just floor space, but it's 120 cells. And
120 beds.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Ooh, yeah. Don't want to say that. 120 beds. Yeah. And can you say the rest of us? And
Mr. Chairman, I'll make a substitute motion that we leave it where it's at.
Okay. So we have a second. Yeah. Okay. So we have we haven't had a second yet for the first motion. So is there a second for that?
I'll second that.
Okay. Okay. So we have a motion and a second. A substitute motion from Mr. Waslin and the second from Mr. Quaison. A substitute motion, I think I need to just take a vote on that right away, or do we need to discuss the substitute motion? Any more discussion on the substitute motion?
Is there
the substitute motion was to leave it at 70?
80.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can always go up too, can't you?
You can. You clearly can.
If I've seen that, it's coming way in under budget.
I thought you just said you're putting in the major space number. You can always go down, but it's hard to go up. So that's why it's better to have.
When you're talking about cell area, you can push it that way. But again, when you go to that schematic design of the project, you could. So I wouldn't, to be quite honest with you, I wouldn't recommend going down. I'd say if you're going to set it at your 85, because you can easily pull down. It will have a budget impact. It's easier to go up here and say, okay, you know what, we're going to trim a little out and add it back in. From a footprint standpoint, those housing units are on the perimeter of the building. It's pushing out it a little bit. So from a planning standpoint, it can be done fairly easily. I think you just set it at the standard. It sets a high, it's going to set a slightly higher budget number, but it sets a slightly higher area number that you can then pull down. I think it's easier. I think it's easier to do it that way.
So, any more discussion on the substitute motion? Okay. So, are you ready to vote on the substitute motion? So, if you're in favor of going with the plan, you need to wiggle your mouse. Wiggle your trackpad. If you're in favor of the substitute motion to basically go with the plan as presented and printed out on your handouts with a roughly 80 square foot cell, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
If you're opposed, say no.
No.
Okay, so I guess that so the substitute motion fails.
Two ayes. Is that what I heard?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Okay, and then are we any discussion on the primary motion? Okay, so if you're ready to vote, so basically, primary motion is the space program, and we're just and keep in mind what we're doing here. We're characterizing our work as we go along. The space program is what it says. Plus the square footages to make them overall roughly 85 square feet per cell. If you're in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
I'll ask for a roll call vote.
Okay. Okay, so I guess.
Questionen?
Pardon?
Questionen?
No.
Waslin?
No.
Do you vote?
Yeah.
Okay,
aye.
Gable. I didn't know if the chairman was voting in these.
Yeah,
okay.
Aye.
Andres.
Aye.
Grumman.
Aye.
McElhaney.
Aye.
That's four in favor.
And Sheriff Wishard. Yeah, he's voting here.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Five in favor, four against. Or two against, sorry.
Okay, so that motion
carries.
So that motion carries. Okay, thank you. That was good. That was good discussion. So, and it's initials.
I only do it based on your last comment that it's easier to set it up this way and come back.
It's always easier to come down and add it bigger.
But we're probably going to have more discussions like this as we get into this.
Like I said, as you go into designing a facility, because this is all pre-designed stuff. This is all preliminary 50,000 foot level planning. As you get into actually doing the building and laying out the building, really that's when you tighten things up. And really you lay things out.
But I think what you said was very informative about how you look at this is kind of like your Bible for the thing you work toward. And then
a good firm, and we'd like to think good firm.
You better be.
You set up what is a realistic program.
Yeah.
And it's not just a wish list. It's clearly an operational requirement.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you work to finalize that building, you work to keep that in line because ultimately it's the budget at the end of the day and it needs to stay where it should be.
Okay. Yeah.
The next piece we're going to review tonight on the agenda, I'm sorry, Leah, if you don't mind me jumping in.
No, yeah, that's that we're in.
has to do with the site options. And we took what you all said from our last meeting back in May and kind of moved that to the next level. Again, these are in-process elements as well. There's still some refinement to be done. Even after we printed them, we realized, you know what, there's some minor refinements that we could still do to this. I would just like to say, too, our goal as we move forward is going to be to get all of you these documents for these meetings. I would much rather you all have a chance to review this 3 or 4 days before a meeting, come with some of the questions, and then be reactive. So we will be getting you these materials as we refine them and go through it, and we'll make sure we send it out to you, Lee, so you can distribute it all to the group. So as you can see, we've really got seven sites identified. We've kept this numbering as they were before. We're probably going to just reduce that to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Bruce, can I jump in? Just on site 16, just for everybody's information, after the last meeting, we had a nice article in the paper that explained, going through the six sites, and then I got a call from somebody. So it's good that the public was calling and said, how about site 16? So then First District did a GIS overview, and you'll see that's what's worked into the brief. So it's kind of one, it's kind of a maybe. So,
and the question I have to Lee is we found some nuances in this we're going to modify.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to send those out to you in the next day or two, then when you issue the meeting minutes. Because I'll explain right now, this option two that says east of courthouse, that's really the Midland building.
Mm-hmm.
And as we turn to it, the Midland building is in combination with we also have, excuse me, a 15A and a 15B, which these become very confusing. That's why we're actually going to pull it back and renumber them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and make sure it's clear and concise. Because the Midland building was in conversation with if the general county government services move out of the courthouse and move into the Midland building, can the courthouse work for justice function? So it's in it's really that option goes with one of these what we're calling 15 courthouse site
augmentation. It's really to an option kind of
exactly thing. It's part of that analysis. You can't have them separate. It's really part of that analysis. Because we agreed way back when that with the CenturyLink building there, it's not like you can demolish the CenturyLink building. It really has, and not that it's even available. So those are the sites. As we get into it, you'll see, and I don't know, Aaron or Dwayne, if you want to talk a little bit, give me a break, but you want to kind of go through the...
Each of the sites, I'm Dwayne, by the way, everybody.
Oh, so just to let you know, Dwayne was here at the interview.
Yeah, he was
Dwayne here. Had all kinds of stuff going on in his life and hasn't been able to make it, so luckily he's back with us now.
Okay.
So on each of the sites, just want to kind of just give you a quick overview of what we got laid out in front of each page. So for each of the sites, what we did is we showed the existing site, show the boundary of the site perimeter and the property lines. We also have some stats on the existing zoning, what the setbacks are, the square footage of the site, etc. So for each of the sites, we've got the basic information.
Is that too dark for everybody? Mm-hmm.
Good. And then on the following page for each site, we have then how the concept would be developed on this site. Now this one might be a little bit... maybe not the best one to look at, but this is the site that everybody knows as the Midland Plaza site. The Midland Plaza building being, of course, the area we've kind of had in orange here. CenturyLink building is adjacent to it on the site. And of course, Bruce mentioned we won't be touching. So Bruce, if you want to just kind of mention the concept about what this site is.
So what we did, and I'm trying to find my paperwork because I've got numerous pieces here that but what we did is there was a previous report that looked at all the various county office buildings.
It was in the Architect Inc. It was a little program.
It was. I'm trying to see if.
Oh, here it is. Great, excellent. So that program back then identified a number of departments: the auditor, treasurer, veteran services, all the various general services functions. What it didn't do is really do a program analysis. So what we talked about with ours, where we took the departments, we did the projections of their operational needs, we looked at the staffing changes, we looked at operational requirements, and we come up with a long-term square footage requirement. Unfortunately, that report or that letter or that meeting minutes didn't go into it. All it did is state what their existing square footage was. What we did is we added that existing square footage just to kind of bring everybody up to speed, which was about 12,000 square feet. Once you get done taking grossing factors, and let me explain grossing factors. So if you have two offices and you have a hallway that connects those, right now the program just has those offices. So you've got to add grossing factors for the circulation to connect all those things. You've got to add grossing factors for lobbies and stairwells and elevators and all these other functions. I'm sorry.
Those stairwells and the elevator and the hallways were already deducted out of that.
You'll see.
I'm just talking about. So here's long and short of it. I'll kind of cut to the chase. If you took all your government services space out on a preliminary without going through a detailed program analysis, it's roughly about 25,000 square feet. If you look at the Midland building, and you look at the three floors above, not the basement level, but three floors above, they're about 8,500 square feet per floor. You've got about 25,500 in the Midland building. So in a quick test, just to see if things will fit, government services with some expansion space could move over to the Midland building and it would work. We don't know the actual, we did get some plans, and from what we've seen in the building, it's a quality building. It's right next to the county courthouse. The things we don't know is, and it sounds like there's some accessibility that's been created, the things we don't know is, what has to be done for remodeling the building? Is the roof at a point where it's going to have to be replaced? Are the windows an original window that are going to have to be replaced? What you do is, part of our assessments a lot of times when we drill into information for a client, which that really wasn't part of the report, when we drill into it, we understand what's the potential cost of acquiring that building, what's the cost of the building,
what's the potential money we're going to have to put into it to bring it up to a usable standard, and what kind of money are we going to have to put into it to remodel it for the offices that we need to go into them. We can do some, what we will do for this report to keep that option in the study, unless you all tell us differently, is we'll put some general numbers of a certain percentage of remodeling, just to get us in the ballpark for what the county might spend in that particular option. Does that help? So, the overview of this in the minutes is the fact that if county offices moved out with projected space, they could potentially fit in the middle of the building. They could fit in the middle. Not even potential, they could fit in
the first class. Middle of the building.
So, this will go, and this will be moved over with one of the options, I think it was 15A or whatever. Okay. Yes, sir.
As I mentioned, too, that for future expansion, they can add at least one story, if not two, to that middle building.
So it was designed to go vertically? Okay.
Yeah.
And just out of curiosity, was that, how'd that come from?
Well, that's what I was going to say. I don't know it's factual. I was told that by the owner.
Okay. Because with any building, to go vertical is not a, is not, when you go to design a new building, there's cost associated with that. Roof joists are much smaller than floor joists from the load they have to support. Your load to support people and loads is smaller than actually your snow load. So to design a structure in the roof that's able to support it, all of your columns and all your footings that go down the ground, as you add up and anticipate for future floors, you're basically a small percentage increasing those. So a lot of times as a building owner or developer, architect might come to you and say, well, here's your $3 million building, but oh, you want to add two floors. Well, to do that, be able to do that in the future, you're now adding $500,000. Some clients say, you know what, that was a great idea. I don't want to spend that additional money. So having said that, I think we can put that as a note that the owner stated they could go additional two floors vertically, which does require replacing the elevator and pulling all that out stuff too. But again, the way we do that in our reports is we acquire whatever structural drawings are there, and we have our engineers look at it and say, yep, that could accommodate another couple floors. But that's the way to truly do it.
And I'm thinking when you say most business owners are that, they would add that additional cost just to go up. But you got to remember, it was a life insurance company that probably looking at it. Expansion.
Very, very good possibility. And it's a very nice building. I mean, it's an Art Deco building built in the 50s. It's a nice building.
Yeah. So anyway, okay. Thank you.
I'll put that. Well, we should put that note as a possible future expansion.
Okay. But this is kind of just an appendage to some other option that some.
So yeah, as Bruce mentioned. That one we were just looking at, that Midland building concept really belongs with another version that you'll see later on in the presentation.
Just
keep that in mind. So this is Site 5. Site 5 is adjacent to the Sunday West side of the court. So on this site, again, it's got the same information here about all the existing stats. And this option here, I guess we could probably just look at the other concept.
Yep. So again, the one thing about this one, too, is, everybody knows where the auditorium is adjacent, just west of the courthouse. There's a large parking lot. But these are all privately owned properties. Attorney's office here, some residential properties. So you'll see in the plan, we'll show this, but the question with this is how much land is acquired? Do you need to buy some of these? Those are all cost impacts for this project. So what we did is, I'll let Dwayne talk about this concept plan.
So what we're trying to do is put everything that programmatically we need for the project on this portion of the site rather than bleeding out onto this side of the site for obvious reasons. The end result, though, is that this concept fully developed here does not address parking need at all, so we can get to that in a minute. But this concept involves using the existing auditorium building in its condition that it is, with some remodeling of the interior to accommodate the sheriff operations and additional space for a law enforcement center garage adjacent to it, so that that piece right there would accommodate the sheriff's operations.
So in the program, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. So the program, going back to that, roughly we're using the auditorium for about 25,000 square feet as identified in the program.
Correct.
With the addition of this squad garage area here,
the jail, which we identified in the program as potentially this, where is it? So that was 33,000 square feet for the jail, which is this pinkish area. And then this white area here was the future expansion. And you'll see this. This is this layout, this information is kind of repeated through all of them. But that's the two pods where we talked about the additional 16 beds. Those are the two pod expansion. So the reality is the county could purchase this property and purchase this from the city, the auditorium, and really maintain the alley line. The problem with that, of course, is there's no parking on the site.
Right.
We've now absorbed all parking.
Is this okay? I'm on call, so I'm making a call.
The next iteration of these that we'll send out and provide later, and we want input. Our goal tonight, to be quite honest, our goal tonight is maybe there's two of these sites don't even make sense. And as we go through it, you might say, okay, these are good and these don't. But as we go through it, we might come back after we've kind of gone through it and talk about that. But there's some, and we are going to add pros and cons to the next iteration of this as well, based on what we see as advantages. Some of the intent of this conversation, of this meeting tonight, is really to get your input about pros and cons of these as well. The first one that jumps out to us is if we do this, unless we acquire this, there's no parking. One of the pros is its proximity to the courthouse.
In all of our concepts that we're showing today, too, this, the idea of having space available for future expansion, in this case, its future expansion of the two 16-bed housing units, is accommodated with, of course, the purchase of some additional property here. But that's an important consideration. That's one of the must-haves in the project that we're being directed to to provide for you. So.
And you had a chance to look at the auditorium building. And
we went through there today, actually.
Okay.
It's a nice building. It's a nice building. It does have some things. It's a solid concrete building.
Mm-hmm.
It does have some spaces that are not going to be very easily adapted and remodeled because there's some bearing conditions down that lower level.
Yeah.
They're kind of broken up by a lot of solid bearing walls. Mm-hmm. It's got some very good space in it, though.
Okay.
One of the great things, though, is the way we look at it, is that, and it's got some space that wouldn't be totally utilized as well, I guess. So that main gymnasium area is where we would probably look to put a lot of the bulk of the sheriff's operation space. Well, it doesn't need a ceiling that's 18 or 20 feet tall.
Right.
Those really are 9-foot offices back. Mm-hmm. So there will be kind of somewhat of a waste of that volume. So to put jail cells in there, because of the shape and the layout, we kind of looked at that preliminarily, it doesn't allow for the configuration, the efficient configuration, from sight lines and controls that this does.
Okay. And you could still preserve the facade of the front of that building. And
We wouldn't touch that. And also, there's a little lobby feature. To tell you the truth, that would stay the same as well.
Okay.
It's really just the auditorium and then the space down below.
Could you ever build two stories in that 50?
It is possible because the structure is pretty stout. I mean, just looking at what's in there with some of these 12-inch concrete walls and stuff, it's a pretty stout structure. Again, we'd have to go through it, so it would be to truly know if you can expand vertically in areas, you have to go through a structural analysis.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's built stout, it would potentially, and off the top of my head, I don't remember that's floor to floor height in there.
In the larger space?
In the gymnasium area.
Mm-hmm.
Seemed like
very
you could probably get two stories in there.
It's at least, I'd say at least 30 feet, isn't it?
It's
pretty tall.
So, to that, and then you lose a piece of it in that bleacher section right here. You really can't demolish that. I mean, it's all built-in concrete. You're not taking that out.
Mr. Christensen,
did you look in, I don't remember now, it's been a long time since I've been in there, but they didn't have any elevator or lift in there, did they?
They do have, which they don't allow anymore, but if it's grandfathered in, someday they'll allow. It's like a railing system where you put your wheelchair on that lift, and it takes you down the railing system. Code actually doesn't allow those anymore, but again, in the grandfathered situation, I believe it is it one on each side?
I think it's on the one side.
Okay.
Just on the north side.
The other batch. So that's what creates the accessibility in that building.
You have to glom an elevator in the jail to be able to access.
And potentially, one of the options we're looking at is putting a new entrance that gave a new elevator and new accessibility to those various levels.
Did you already comment on how most of these options, they look like this more or less, but
But for the to add court space in any of them, you would go above the admin part of the or the program part of the jail.
So one of the things we need to discuss tonight is in all the options we have identified how the jails could work, how the jail could lay out and be appropriate with operations. It really depends to be appropriate for all of you and to provide the best experience that we can to the table. First thing we'd look at is what do we see as the most critical aspect of what the county's looking at? Well, I think the jail is. We think the jail is. The condition that you're dealing with, the liability risk of the conditions that the county's dealing with, and the problems within the jail because of the lack of appropriate ACA spaces and things like this. It creates sightline risk. It creates risk for staff as well as inmates. We think the jail is the number one priority. We think, secondly, the courts also need to be addressed. And really, a sheriff doesn't have space, but there's a level of hierarchy. So in every one of these options, we show the inmates accommodated in a new correctional facility. At the last meeting, we talked to the judge, and we talked to the idea about a potential courtroom. You have video arraignment in South Dakota, which does allow you the ability to do some arraignment hearings and things without the inmate being brought. The part of the idea of the spaces that go with it are operational efficiency. If you have the courts with the jail and you're able to move, and I think you saw in National Center of State Courts where they talk about this efficiency, it's a zone movement. You've got public, you've got courts, and you've got secured, well, actually four, and then you've got inmate movement. Well, inmate movement typically is from the jail directly up into a holding area between courtrooms. They're never exposed to the public, they're never exposed to the staff, and there's an efficiency and speed in which those inmates are moved, which ultimately results to an operational efficiency. So in all of these options, we're not moving the inmates. In Douglas County, which you all saw in Douglas County, they built a jail separate from their courthouse. And over at the courthouse, they built a inmate transfer area. So now, whenever they move inmates back and forth to court, they have to put them in a van, they have to take that van, drive over to the courthouse, pull into that sally port, unload those inmates, stage them in an area, and then take them up to the courtroom. There's time associated with that. It's operational inefficiency. It's correctional staff operational inefficiency.
For those that didn't see that, didn't go on that trip, it's basically, to me, it was like a mini jail stuck on the side of the courthouse.
Exactly.
With a sally port, the whole works.
Yeah, so that's exactly it.
Yeah.
So what happens is, and I'll be quite honest, I saw the operational inefficiency of that, but there were some other factors that drove that. In every one of these, we're keeping the inmates in the jail and saying, okay, there's a court function that's over here. So now we're able to create that efficient lack of moving or minimizing the necessity to move inmates multiple places. What we have done, though, that I want to talk to the judges about is we're potentially talking about splitting court functions. And is that appropriate? And does that create operational inefficiency as well? And it all talks about where we go with existing building versus new building. That's kind of where these subjects are going, because we could move, you know, when you look at the courts program, and this is going to be a good subject to kind of go through now briefly, is in the courts program, we've got the court courtroom and sports space, we've got the judicial chambers, we've got the clerk of courts, court services, state attorney, and then some building securities kind of support. That's what their program summary is. There's an opportunity in some facilities where court services, which is like probation department, we've seen in some facilities where they're not located within the justice facilities. We've seen where the attorneys are sometimes not located. So it's somewhat of a discussion, because we're either building more building to accommodate everybody in one location, or we're having some operational movement. And we owe you all that analysis to look at what is that operational impact. So that's kind of where we're going to go with the next one, trying to build the appropriate amount of building, but not building, I'm not just saying, okay, we're going to move everybody. Because if you move everybody, then the question comes, what do you do with your existing courthouse? So we're going to go through these options and talk about that. We are going to follow up with some questions to the state attorney, to courts, about if you were to have court services and if you were to have state attorney in a separate building, What is the frequency in which they travel? What is the frequency in which they would potentially travel? From that information and the number of individuals that would travel for various cases, we can do an analysis on what is the time impact. Are those people now spending another 1,000 hours? Well, not 1,000 hours would be off base. They're spending another 100 hours a year in that movement, and then that's creating an operational inefficiency, because we can equate that to what they get paid and what their salary is and the operational inefficiency of that, because if you have more caseload and you're adding people because now they can't do their job as efficiently. If the justice facility is located 20 miles outside of town, we can assess that hourly time extension, and we can also start to analyze what the cost of that travel is. So, in other words, what I'm saying is we're going to follow up with some additional questions to help define what all is at each location, which we need to kind of verify for the operational efficiency.
Let's stay on the slide for just a second.
Yep.
But just as another point of that whole discussion is that none of our concept floor plan layouts here are affected by any of that decision. Another way to say that is, in this case, this concept shows the jail and the sheriff's operations on this footprint here. Court's program would be, in this case, it could be built directly over the jail on one or more stories to accommodate the however much square footage we need on that footprint. Okay. So, operationally, that works without having to modify the diagram.
So, and what got in my mind a little bit, too, to take a little bit further is, if we can build a second floor in this area, can we acquire additional space in here? And what's the cost of that to kind of connect those two? There's some opportunity there as well.
Yep.
So, okay. Does that make sense? Have I made the situation more confusing or a little clearer, you think?
Good. Looking at options.
Good, exactly.
So do you want to get to site 6, and again, I think we're going to renumber the site, but all of them are going to have the names associated with them. So this is the County Highway Department site. And probably, but I think that this whole entire triangular site is currently now public works, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's some space back here for yard space. This is the part of the site that we looked at here for the Justice Center.
And again, that kind of came out of the last meeting where we talked about if you were going to build on the site, where would you build it? And it was kind of where their additional highway shop materials are, I think was discussed back in that area.
Now, on the downtown sites, the downtown sites had commercial zoning. This site happens to have industrial zoning, which actually has a parking requirement. The downtown sites don't have zoning required parking. This one does, but we've accommodated it. We're trying to use the same parking rationale, though, for every one of the sites, and we can talk more about that a little bit later. But this site has a requirement for, I think it's shown on the next page, but it basically covers the program. This site, in fact, of course, just using this end of the site, accommodates the entire program. It accommodates what we want to have for secure access around the site, for security vehicles, so forth, public parking space, staff parking, and work release parking. It's zoned out properly to have those zones on the site as well as internally in the building. The area in blue right here, we should explain, is part of the sheriff's operations that's devoted to the highway patrol.
And emergency management.
Right. So essentially, it is part of the sheriff's operations, part of the program. And again, you can see the jail is laid out on that in the pink or red color, as well as there are a couple areas of actual expansion space. And the white here is the same housing unit expansion space that we had in the downtown auditorium site. But there's enough site space here that we could also accommodate even an additional space there if necessary, even beyond in the future.
So some of these sites are a little outlying. You can see there's a lot of future expansion capabilities on some of these sites.
I can see we need to construct, as far as pros and cons, it looks like you'd have to construct some roads if some you do that.
Anytime the site is bigger, your typical land development costs are going to be more because of the roads and potential utilities. And in this one, there's some going to be, I don't think there's any buildings back here per se.
No.
There's a weed shed.
So a little shed you can almost blow down, but if it's a building that you got to clear, then that's demolition cost, and those all need to be factored in.
Yeah. Well.
Now, on that site, where do they have their storage of gravel piles and everything?
Right there. Yes.
So then they would have to move them somewhere else. Yeah. They have,
that's
That's a con, yeah. Right. We have to figure that one out.
Yeah, although we tried to maintain some of Public Works, they're...
Part of a synchronized discussion.
This justice facility, though, it fits better, it works better up here than it does trying to fit it down here.
Yeah.
It just seems like it works out better. And this is the down the corner here on most of the, on all of the sites here, where we address the parking issue.
And you're looking at the zoning. Was there a height limitation on that?
Yeah, there was. In this case, I think it was 40 feet.
Yeah. Yep, 40 feet.
Oh, because of the airport.
Yeah.
Now,
there is one of the sites that's a C3 zoning that's a 30-foot limit. We'll have to be really careful with that one.
Yeah, so, I mean, two-story building, 40 feet is not a problem. Our three-story building starts to push on that height.
So, yeah, in a case like that, that's good that this site would have that eastward expansion. Bit there.
Yeah, and depending on which, we assume that this would be the access road. Okay. If it was turned out that this, you know, this would actually be the front road here, we would just put the diagram over.
Yeah.
Is that the case? Is this the main road coming through this area?
That might be a little easier to access, but yeah, the main road feels like Highway 20, but yeah, there's the 10th Street is there too. So
once again, the issue is you're talking a state highway. And if you think that you can add a driveway and a road to a state highway,
curb cuts,
you're looking at a long process with a good chance of no.
Okay.
Yeah, if we can get this to be the access, one access, this is not a lot.
So we'll mirror that to show access off. And so anyway, from a site location standpoint, I think this is a viable location. It's county-owned property. There's a lot of area up there that could be accommodated. Even if Public Works were to do some remodeling or expansion, it seems to us that there's a good amount of property still down in this area. So this to us seems like a viable option.
And again, we would show on all these concepts a determined footprint for a courts, but in this case, it would stack up on top of this portion of the building right here.
And what we'll do to make that a little clearer, because this is just a footprint, I think we might have a smaller image that identifies a second floor footprint and help to show that. We'll just have to clear. We know it. We're laying it out. We're figuring it out. We know the square footages. But if we do another diagram of that second floor area, it'll help you all, and it'll document what those thoughts are as well.
So you're saying for the part that you want to attach to the minutes, you want that, like that, or just for the next time?
We could.
Do it the next time.
Okay. I think the next time around is going to have the pros and cons. Yeah, we've got to develop that, but we will add.
Because this is what we're using for this meeting. So.
The only thing, I think the biggest thing for the meeting minutes, Lee, is adding the Midland with that one number to make it clear that that's kind of part of one concept.
Yeah.
That's the big one to me. Okay. The next one.
Site number 8. Now, this site was previously studied. It's in the study as well. We're going to call it something other than the previous justice site. We're going to call it the 212 site. Highway 212.
West 212.
West 212 site.
I don't think we need a motion on what to call the site.
This site, similar to the other site, has plenty of square footage and area on site. And obviously, there are no buildings to demolish on this site. It is zoned as A1 agriculture and industrial, so it does have some zoning requirements for parking. Again, not really a problem for us. This is the one. Let's see, what is the height of that? Oh, height 40 feet. Okay, so we should be okay there. But it's a little bit further away, of course, from the downtown.
Does the county currently own this property?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. If I show the concept. So the concept we showed here, I'm showing here, very similar to the last concept. We're spreading the building out, in this case, in our south axis. We're allowing for future expansion, again, for the housing, and there's future expansion space available on site back in this area here, as well as we're going to show it, but there is even space on the front if we're I'm using this criteria to expand. Or we could shift the building down closer to the road.
So one of the questions that came up earlier, too, is if the city will extend a road through here. And if that's the case, like you talked about, rather than working with the Department of Highway with access here, if that road goes through here, that might be a better and more accessible access off of this new extension road.
Yeah. I think in that case, we'd want to flip this around because kind of, all these zoning, parking areas, this would be a public parking area, this would all be staff and work with this parking, so we're trying to zone the site as well. So if that was the primary road, we'd put the whole diagram over.
Lee, I think on this one, it would be recommended that it show the around if this is a viable site.
Well, in theory, it's viable. I guess one of the cons is working out all those access issues. You know, it's pretty; it could get a little complicated. And then it's still outside the city limits right now, so you have to.
And it's got to be annexed. But I think unless it gets ruled out, it should be flipped to show the appropriate access off a street.
Well, as a matter of fact, we could flip it regardless.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I kind of agree. I think you assume, and we dot this road in as a future road, and we show access off that rather than off 212.
The other thing I would point out is that we'd propose two connections on the highway. What we'd do is, if one was the main access, we'd take another one, we'd route it this way. We do want to have a ring around the building for circulation.
And fire protection.
Right.
For access.
Any questions?
Did you check into anything more as like the utilities and stuff?
Sanitary sort of currently is out to the site. I'm not sure about water.
As far as I know, everything is there right along the highway right away, because just to the west, if you were to pan out, you have basically an industrial park that's been annexed into the city limits, and I know they have water, they have sewer, they have gas. So I'm fairly confident it's all right there. I just was wondering if you double check that or
not. That cost extra for first district. we got our dues paying part.
The other thing with some of these sites too is again, this is big picture planning. You could tighten things up in ways to allow for other future expansion of other county functional facilities too.
So, because in fact, we could take this parking, for example, too. We could stretch it this direction, allowing that space for building construction.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay.
So this is site 14. So this is the site that's north of the fire department.
Yep, 0.7 miles.
So this is. So I can't read that very well.
Do you have a concept?
Is that this height? Well, still high. Still high. Same zoning. Same zoning as the other two sites we just looked at. This is a little more compact. I don't have the property line shown here, but it is on the next plan. We were able to get the entire footprint on the site.
Can you go to the next slide? There you go.
We are able to get the footprint on the site. And the red red is the property.
It's our driveway.
This site does have setbacks that are limiting our ability to go close to the site, the perimeter, but we're keeping it within, and we do have space in here for the housing expansion. There's very little space available for building.
You have one thing that's mislabeled on there. At the very bottom of the screen, it says South Compesca Boulevard. That's actually the driveway for the fire department. It's not South Compesca Boulevard.
Oh.
That is a little off.
It's not like a big deal, but just didn't want anybody to get confused.
Yeah. Where's the property? So the red is the property line, Dwayne. Where is the building set at?
Well, that's the purple. It looks like it's hard to see. It's a little hard to see.
It's a blue. Yeah, there's a blue line.
Okay.
Yeah,
so we're keeping it. So it's more constrained, but we are reconfiguring our building enough on site in this case to make it still all work. So the same kind of opportunity there for the upper level courts functions. But as you can see, there's less site available for any future expansion. We still do have the space for the housing expansion, though that's a must have. There is less parking available on this site, however, just by the sheer footprint of things.
Maybe the public opinion might share. That's the newspaper to the that building to the
here.
There's a nice big parking lot.
In your layout there, what is the parking? How much do you have?
What we've determined from the zoning and from the need for jail staff and work releases that a total of 188 spaces
is needed.
That's what. Yes.
Okay.
Yep. What we've got on site here total is 160.
So we're a little shy on the parking.
That is, I will say too, that total of 188 was derived from the full courts program.
Oh, so that's assuming everybody moves over.
It is, that's worst case.
Court services, state attorney, everybody. And we also, there's also calculations are based on all three courtrooms being full. So it's a maximum peak kind of thing.
So this might actually be fairly close to 160 if we didn't put everything out there. But again, that's an operational discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Can we talk a little bit about access to this site as well? Just want to make sure we've got this. We assume that we have an access point out. Is that third?
Third Street. Yeah,
there's some driveway.
As well up here on third. Is it third and third?
Yeah. You probably don't on Third Avenue is a bit harder, I think, because that's the way the land, it really rises up there.
It would be possible.
What about down here? Is there
no?
So this is the majority of public parking down here in this site concept, but we can access here.
But that makes sense because the way it bottlenecks up to the north, you really don't want to have your parking down here to get this laid out properly. Yeah, I guess
your entrance should be around here. Public entrance.
I mean, I guess you could almost.
I don't know if it'd be the fifth way, but if you took this and mirrored it to where the jail component's stretching out here,
I don't think it's fit.
And that goes that way. But I don't think it works out as well for parking.
And right. It's
just looking at the way that goes.
Yeah.
Tell me what's a little bit around. So this is the newspaper?
No. Newspapers to the northwest. Oh. Or northeast, rather.
Oh, northeast. Okay. And what's this for?
It's a warehouse. It's
storage
right now. It's kind of been, like, under construction for the last 4 to 5 years. It looks like there's going to be businesses in there someday, but nobody knows. The other two buildings on the north of that, the blue ones, that is heating and cooling business. And then to the south, that's actually a driveway that goes back in there behind.
Over there?
No. To the left. Okay, right there. That's a driveway for Mole Oil, which is back in there behind, which is a petroleum provider.
Okay. Is that what caused the contamination issues that the city dealt with before?
No. And then the building down on the south or the bottom left, that's the old Home Bakery, which is there's another business in there now.
Manufacturing business.
Yeah, the manufacturing business. The cause of the contamination is most of this site in the bigger picture, it predates me, but let's just say back in like say the 30s. Was a humongous gas station, oil, I don't know, maybe even refinery.
In this yes. area?
Yeah. So, if I can see your pointer.
Yeah.
You can actually see, like, right in here, there's a building there. There used to be storage tanks here. All this area here, and it was connected down over here to this gas station. I don't know what all it was, but it was a humongous gas station.
So we might have some decontamination to deal with.
Well, yeah, because yes. Remember, was it last month I told you that the city actually did a dig right here?
Yeah, I was remembering.
And they went down 20-some feet and abandoned the project because it was, they had spent the grant of whatever it was, and they said, well, we're not going to go any farther, but it's definitely contaminated soil. I mean, proven fact right there. And they're absolutely sure it's all over right in here and down over in here.
a cost issue.
So, you know, when it comes to contaminants, again, like a lot of things, the cost to remediate that soil can range greatly. So, just saying, based on site limitation and that potential for soil contaminants, and even site access being somewhat a little difficult, I mean, this one is kind of a questionable site, in our opinion.
Yeah.
Is this one that you would want to keep on as an option, or is this something that, as we're going through, that you could take a step back from?
I thought we already did.
I thought we ruled this out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we gave it a low score before.
But it was on the lowest of the scores.
If we're comfortable ruling it out, then we should
make a motion with it.
Why don't we wait till the end? We can, if we want to.
Okay.
I don't know. We don't really have that as an action item on the agenda, just as a discussion item. But we're an advisory committee, so I'm not sure it's a huge deal.
The next site is the existing courthouse site, and again, it's downtown, like Dwayne was saying. So it's in a C1 district. There are no setback requirements. You could build back up to the property line areas. There is a height restriction in the area, a maximum of 50 feet, and there's no parking requirements. The distance to the existing courthouse says 1.9. I don't know why that is.
I think it's much closer.
I think it is much closer than 1.9. I think we can adjust that to 0. And as you go to the next plan, so this is when I say that it's in process. So what we did on this site is said, okay. Part of there's two things going on with this plan. One is the sheriff's operations and building that, and there's building a new jail facility. And this actually was looking more at a multiple, almost a three-story facility, correct?
Yeah, so it would be the lower level floor of it would be the jail support spaces, like the kitchen, the programming areas, all that. Not the housing cells themselves, it would be the intake area. And then above that footprint then would be the housing portion of the project, the housing and the observation staff space.
So again, based on that program area that we looked at, these are identified program square footages based on those program areas. And was the LEC, or was the sheriff's operation, was it more of a two-story, or was it a single-story for this?
That is a single-story.
I think you talked about putting the courts on top of that.
Yeah, so the courts could go on top of this, and this would pretty much support their program. You could build as much or as little as you need to for the courts operation to tie into the existing. So there is some advantage to this.
Garage would be below, so I just...
The garage would be below.
Or it'd be either the garage would be below or there would be a portion of it on a second story.
So there's a couple things I want to discuss on this site plan. Well, first off is this jail needs to be mirrored and it needs to attach to the LEC. You really don't want this disconnection because that's kind of what we talked about before. So this needs to be mirrored
just flip-flop.
Yep, exactly. Yep. So the plan that we're going to send back and revise for the meeting minutes, you'll see that tied to it. The other thing, too, is this: if this is the jail housing, a lot of times what we'll do is, if the courts are on the second level here, there is the possibility to bring inmates in and up an elevator up to the second floor in between courtrooms. If we just built sheriff's offices or sheriff's operations here, I should say, and utilize this for courts where we use the Midland building, then a lot of times what there is an elevator or stair core that then brings the inmates back into the courts area. It's, again, when we lay these out, we're looking to do the optimum efficiency for security and safety of movement of inmates, separation of staff and public and things like that. The ones where they come up and into the area between courtrooms is much more efficient than bringing them up and then having to slice through a hallway to get them to a courtroom. So there's good and bads to how you can do layouts of this. But we're going to do the refinements of that. In a three-story, Al, why don't you talk about a three-story jail versus what we consider a single-story jail cell, if you want.
One of the issues that we have to address once this is here is talking about the operational efficiencies. When you have a booking, for example, on what would be considered a subground level, because if you look at the slope of the courthouse where that sits, you'd be driving in to a lower level, so you'd have a booking and intake, so you'll have staff on that lower level.
you don't have the ability to get outside light in, so you don't have long-term holding in that area. So now we have to move them up to the next level. And if you remember on all our one-story plans, the housing unit is actually a two-story open volume. So you're looking at least two floors for managing. And the bigger question is, what is it going to take for staff to manage those two floors? And then secondly, what is it going to take to get them from the jail to the courts, depending upon whether it's in the main courthouse or it's in the new building. Either way, we have to define that staff cost in of operation. That can be significant, and that's where, in my eyes, that's where the rubber is going to meet the road. If you're going to save money by putting the building on, but you're adding a half a dozen staff or a number of staff, you've just strapped this facility for the rest of its life for more expenses, because that's an ongoing expense. So the next meeting, we'll have pros and cons. We'll look at it, and then people can react to the pros and cons that are there. In dealing with inmates, especially if they're coming in intoxicated or they've had a domestic or they're having a mental health issue, having to have an emergency response from a second level down to a first level, you're now having staff running down stairwells, kind of like what you've got right now in your lower work release unit there and such, where if there's a fight, you have to go down to that. You create a less secure facility, which will drive a need for a higher than possibly normal staffing ratio that's there. That's one of my biggest cries, is to make sure that the staffing is efficient, is effective, but if it's going to kill the facility, I have to be honest and upfront and say, look, you're adding five or six staff. Is this the best place to go? We aren't at that point yet. That's something that, as we put it together and talk about it, because the other component is, right now, it's, as I call it, it's an accordion effect that jail staff take people to the courts, they come back, they're walking across the parking lot. When you create a formal function where you're moving them through a tunnel to meet maybe a bailiff who's officially assigned to court security that day, and you have a transfer point, we now have a more formidable process. We need to know what it's going to take to staff that, and we don't have that right now.
So this was a test to really see what happens if we try to go more of a three-story jail. What does that footprint look like on the site? It's got some negatives to it.
In the short term, what does the cost impact have on as far as phasing that? I mean, you have inmates that you're going to have some home for in the interim.
Any plan we come up with, the reality is there needs to be, if you were constructing a new jail here, that needs to be constructed in order to and get occupied before you touch this existing. Okay. You don't want to suddenly have out-of-county housing.
Right.
We did one facility, we assumed a year's construction, and they had about 60 inmates that they had to house out of county. So first off, the complexity is finding out-of-county housing. Mm-hmm. Where are you going to house 60 to 90 inmates in other jurisdictions? And how are you going to bring them back and forth to the court's proceedings that you need to on a regular basis? Mm-hmm. So every facility, I don't think we should get into a topic of housing them out, because in our opinion, that's not the most efficient.
Right.
It's the most costly to the county to house them out while construction's occurring.
But those are factors that you're definitely filling in.
Yes,
okay.
And
it's a factor in the project cost.
Yeah.
I mean,
Pennington County, Minnesota, which is about to start construction, we're tearing down their work release, but before we tear down the work release, we're actually building and modifying a temporary area to make sure it works.
Okay.
The cost of that temporary, the project still came in way under budget, cost to build that temporary space, to phase it, which only adds some 4 or 6 months to the schedule, still was cheaper than trying to send them out of county. So we look at that approach. Yes,
okay,
sir.
But first of all, you'd have to phase, probably you'll have to do the sheriff's portion first, because the first part of your jail phase is where the sheriff's at now. So you're going to have to phase one, do the sheriff's, then move him out into there. Then you're going to do the first half of the jail, and the second phase, and then your third phase, you're going to do the third phase. So, I mean, just by doing the phases, you're talking, what, 2 to 3 years of construction?
No, not three. I mean, you're typically adding 6 months, so it could add another year. It could add, but so you're taking a 16-month project, too. So it's getting awful close.
I look at this proportion here, and I slide it like this,
And I say, okay, if I have a section of housing unit right here, I can clear those other buildings. Not that operations for the sheriff is going to be great, because now we're blocking off his potential access to his driveway. So, again, that's got to be looked at when we slide that over. But I think a part of the housing unit could be constructed, and really this would be the excess area that could be future parking. But we'll send that. Let me go into the next option, too.
Yes, sir. There's another iteration I'm going to add to this discussion that we've talked about more and more. We want to look at the cost and the implications of trying to utilize that as much as possible. So that's, we haven't looked at that a lot here, or at least shown that diagrammatically. The more we talked about it, the more we said, okay, well, we're using the courthouse, and we're looking to see how much we can utilize the courthouse. While we know that there's a higher cost of remodeling a jail facility because of all the hardened construction of solid concrete or solid block walls with reinforcement, we understand the cost of trying to remodel that space. We still think it's a value to all of you and to the public to at least have looked at it to say, okay, what can we? And if we can, what's the cost to try to utilize that? So we want to look at one option, look at trying to repurpose this, reuse this, and then build from there. So I'm sorry, sir, go ahead.
No, that's all right. I was just wondering, you were talking about this other county that they shipped out all their inmates, you know, and then they had to...
That was an option we were looking at. We stayed away from it just to...
But what is the possibility now? I realize a lot of them have to come back to court hearings and everything.
Okay.
But what about the inmates that have been already sentenced and they're serving their time, where you wouldn't have all the transportation? Would it alleviate some of the problem if some of those were housed out and then the ones that had to have court services, you kept them in there in a little smaller facility?
So the pre-sentence versus sentence kind of...
Right. I mean, I'm just throwing it out there.
You could. And it's a separate analysis that I'm hoping... Right now, it's a conversation that we're hoping wouldn't have to happen, because just so everybody knows, out-of-county housing, if you can find cells, if you can find beds that are available, we know in most areas the cost of those beds range anywhere from $50 to $60 per day per inmate. Mm-hmm. So you're paying that per day for an inmate to be housed somewhere else. Assuming that facility will house all your inmates, because sometimes they look at your more disruptive, more high-offensive individuals and say, sorry, we don't have the space for those high-classification individuals here, those max-security individuals here. We've seen facilities where they're transporting inmates an hour and a half, 2 hours away from their facility. So now you take that housing cost and you add that transportation cost if you have to bring them back and forth to court, which most of your inmates...
Well, that's what I said. I'd say just the ones that are sentenced, when you don't have to bring them back.
But figuratively, I mean, what...
I don't know.
But I'm saying if you had to house 90 inmates, I mean, hopefully you could defer some of them. If you take 90 inmates, even $50 a day, that's just a massive amount of expense.
Let me give you a little bit of a mind's eye of what we're dealing with recently. As of recent, we had very few sentenced inmates actually in our custody. Better than 80% of them were pretrial, to where we were holding pretrial inmates for the first time in dormitory areas that we had never used for pretrial before. So we're holding more pretrial inmates. And it's easy for people not in the business to think of prisoners and a warehouse concept where we can just move them here and put them there. And that's not the case, because we would still have to allow for 24-hour booking and temporary holding for bonding. And we would still need to accommodate the courts for rights being read, initial appearances. All of those functions would still have to take place within a facility somewhere. So it's a 24-hour, always moving animal that you literally cannot just stop, put a cap on, and say we're gonna just start doing it somewhere else without having a facility set up ready to go.
Only 20% of the inmates are actually serving time.
Well, as of recent, that's the trend that we've seen, where there's a lot more pre-trial, pre-sentenced individuals in our custody.
Sheriff,
which means ongoing court.
Well, that definitely would be an option.
But it's going to be a factor. I mean, when we talk about an option like this, that's a project cost.
We can discuss it, yeah. But it's an ongoing.
People wonder about going. I mean, we hear those comments a lot. So I think it's good to document, you know, the pros and cons of that option. So.
And as we go through these pros and cons, so you are aware, if we see something that's going to require phasing, we'll document that phasing. We'll document what anticipated additional time frame it might take. So we'll give you that information in the report. So really, what we started to look at with this option, with all these options, and it's a little hard to see. I think the handout copies that you all have probably read a little bit better. It's just hard to see. So with this option, what we did is said, what happens if government services moves out? So this plan...
So county government.
County government offices kind of move out, and this plan starts to look at how do you utilize the space? Well, you know, what you'll see on the... And this doesn't... The basement, we're assuming, still maintained for storage because it's structural down there and things like that. It's not a lot. But, you know, if you see court services down here in this yellow... I'm having trouble seeing mine as well. Clerk of Courts is over here. And
why don't you turn the lights for this one, for this couple slides?
Yeah, probably good. Yeah.
Snap out of it.
So, you know, clerk of courts, basically, if we take that area out, it's about 200 square feet over the programmed area, which is the National Center of State Courts. You'll see in all the options, and I'm not tell you, Judge, one of the judges, I should say, is, you know, I'm not necessarily a proponent that courts stack on multiple levels. I think there's an operations to that. But every one of them, when you look at this building, in the east side of the building, there's a column-free floor-to-floor area in all of these areas. I mean, currently you have your main courtroom below this kind of void here. So you're on the second level, your main courtroom here, and you've got a hearing courtroom, I believe, back here. This is because in the structure up above, they created this cutout to give that taller volume. Column free, so two of the things, and again, if you all remember some of the information you all went through with the National Center of State Courts, two of the big things, or a couple of the big things with courts, is column free. So when people, whether it's courts proceedings within the well, can all see, there's proper sight lines from the various positions within the well. Spectators that are in the area can actually see the proceedings as well. Column free courtrooms are what is recommended for all facilities. You do see some that have it, and it's not a good situation. The other thing that's required is the height of a courtroom. Most are typically taller volume spaces. The courts and the courts proceeding in the bench area are elevated from the kind of well floor. And because of that, and because of the size of the space, National Center State Courts typically recommend of anywhere 16 to 14 feet clear within that area. That's what we typically do in most of our facilities, whether it's a 16 to 14 foot. What happens in some of these, while we're able to create clear spans here, column free, in this space, and I think we've identified here as well, we've identified in small print where some of these ceiling heights are. So the second level, which is here, the reality is, other than these tall volumes that they've identified here, it's only a 12-foot floor-to-floor. What 12-foot floor-to-floor means from that lower level down there to this level here is 12 feet. And by the time you're done with the structural floor system in there and mechanical systems, you potentially negated another 3 feet of other pieces in there. So that means your maximum ceiling height is right around this 9-foot ceiling height. Does that make sense? I should probably bring stuff to sketch with me in the future. But so it gives you about 9 feet. That would be tight. Now, for a hearing room, it's not so bad. And the reality is these are conceptual. So I want to make it clear to everybody, what we did here in this exercise was looked at what the National State Center of Courts showed as program area and how that program area could be accommodated in this building. Again, Judge, I think we want feedback from y'all of you of how we laid that out and where things are. But this was a test to see if what the program area could fit in this building if the general government services were actually moved out. And what we found out is it would actually work. So I'll start with the first floor. First floor, again, court services, we put them down here on the main level as you come into the building.
So that's probation, just for refresher.
So.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have to take that back. Here's the ground level. So the ground level is clerk of court. So when you come in, you need to know where you're going. You're paying a fine. Typically, in most court facilities, your clerk of courts is at the front door, and that's kind of where they are right now. We are showing the need to remodel some bathrooms. There are some nuances that go up and down. Again, I'll go through that in a minute. And we showed the idea of, we show both courtrooms. So, again, this, the program identified a 2,000-square-foot jury courtroom, an 1,800-square-foot courtroom, and an 800-square-foot hearing room. So on this level, we're showing a, I think this was the 2,000-square-foot jury courtroom on this primary level. We're showing some attorney conference rooms. We're showing a judge's chambers directly adjacent to the courtroom. We're showing a jury deliberation space adjacent directly to the courtroom. There's some height issues going on with this space. It's not ideal. The ADA would have to be worked out because all of you that have been through this facility, there's steps up here, there's steps up here. There's elevation issues that create really some problems with trying to do this.
Does everybody relate to where that is? That's the equalization office now.
The source right, that, 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 equalization.
So the bottom of the page is north, right?
No, actually, we flipped these now.
Yeah.
North is us.
Oh, no, that one. Well, on this one,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, are they
yeah,
still wrong?
Yeah, it is wrong. Yeah.
Okay.
So, but, yeah. Thanks for mentioning that.
On the first level, which is right here, we're showing court services. So now we're showing probation or so up on that level. And again, that's pretty close to their, well, it's more than their program area. There's some excess here in that, too. So, again, I want to, our colored diagram is going to show exactly what's required, and we want to just leave white what's additional area not identified in the program. It's a little misleading because the program for court services is about 2,100 square feet. This is almost 3,400 square feet. So there's a large chunk area that's really excess. We did identify that 1,800 square foot courtroom here, your another jury courtroom on this side, again, adjacent to the judge's chamber, adjacent to the jury. Now, this one doesn't have the stepping and the ADA issues as much as the other floors do. There appears to be a cleaner transition here. You could make a court entrance kind of off here. It gets a little tight. Configuration would have to be laid out to figure out how things work. There are exiting requirements. Again, there's a lot of nuances. When you have a courtroom, which is considered an assembly space by code, anytime you're over 50 people, you're required to have two exits out of it. So again, the exits have to be located in certain areas. So there's some circulation movement around this to meet code. This involves extensive remodeling. All of this involves extensive remodeling to make this all work for courts. And then operationally, it's split on multiple levels. On the second floor, this space here shown in green is the state attorney's office, which does achieve that square footage required and shows it as that court security space for some of the various operations there, and then a hearing room with judges' chambers. And when we say judges' chambers, it's the clerk, it's the reporter, it's all those spaces that were identified in the. It's not just a judge's office, it's all the other support space and the support staff that the judge has as well. We're also assuming in all these diagrams that the Legion, I think, has space on the top floor. Maybe. I mean, this space was kind of built, this building was built somewhat to support the Legion. This is an interesting space up here. There's a couple code issues that I've talked about. Anytime you have 50 people above any floor, you're required to have two exits out of the building from a safety standpoint. Right now on the second floor, as you can see, there's one stairwell that takes you out of here. No matter what's done, there has to be something added. Whether it's a court security vestibule, there needs to be another stair out of this. So again, we need to show that and add that to the scheme. The code does allow you, if you have 10 people or less up on a floor because of a life safety issues, if you have 10 people or less, one stair is acceptable. The way this top floor is, it's got an elevator, so it's handicap accessible. But really, these are two small office areas, in essence. Mm-hmm. So therefore, it's acceptable by code that they not have a secondary stair out of that area. Mm-hmm. Plus, a lot of this is open to the floor below, so and maintenance kind of attic space.
It's attic space, yeah.
So you really can't get into that. So again, we're not planning on any of these options of really touching that Legion space. Whether that works good with courts and things like that. But again,
I don't think we can because
I think there was a contract in 1928 that they, the American Legion contributed substantially financially to the construction with the provision that they'd always have space up.
We should know what that says, though. The best I found was in the minutes of 1926 or something where they did this, and it basically was just a motion. And they just... But that's what I found so far.
That's what the Legion thinks.
Yeah.
So in the pros and cons in this, we're going to identify by floor where we see accessibility issues. Where do we go? Must have skipped one. We're going to identify by floor where we see accessibility issues, where we see code issues for accessing and exiting, and where we see extensive remodeling, which is really, when you look at it, it's a lot of remodeling with this. Then you couple on top of that, and I kind of elicit your opinions a little bit, splitting courts on multiple floors, we don't see that. A couple things. One is splitting courts on multiple floors, it does have some operational impact. On this plan too, when we talked about the jail on that south side of the courthouse, when I talked about it earlier, this is where we talked about that, say, the second level, if the jail's sitting back here somewhere, this is where you have to punch through somewhere, or on the first level, you have to punch through somewhere to get that connection to the jail to bring inmates through. So instead of bringing between courtrooms, potentially bringing through a hallway like this, or, you know, the location and access isn't as ideal as it could be as well. Judges, some initial thoughts about this layout?
Is there any plan to have a courtroom with a holding area kind of attached to it so that you don't have inmates just kind of out in the courtroom? Is that, and which courtroom is that thought to be?
So that would be typically one of your jury courtrooms. It should, because a lot of times we see that inmates are staged in the jury box during those trials.
So that's what we do now.
Yeah. So we should identify one of these courtrooms. And my guess would be in this option, probably more of the second level, or maybe even it could be the first level, because if the jail's directly here, maybe it could be right in here and attached to it. And instead of these all being an attorney conference room, maybe we find another chunk. Typically for every courtroom, we try to have two attorney conference rooms. It's just, again, a standard. But I think we would identify a court's holding area adjacent to that courtroom.
Judge, this also goes back to the question that we had before of the functional efficiency if there was one courtroom in the existing jail.
Right.
And having you move over with your staff to operate out of there as a part of rotation, that negates a lot more of the moving people that way.
Yeah.
It's great for one, but it may create a greater inefficiency for you. So, I mean, it's not a right or wrong. It's identifying the pros and cons and what makes it easier and what makes it harder. So,
and it's a balancing
act. It's a balancing act. It really is.
We're trying to help you provide an appropriate facility, and we're also trying to look at, okay, where might the budget go? Because the more new courts we build versus remodel, okay, how does that go? And also, if we all agree, okay, we're going to convert this into a courts facility, a justice facility, and we suddenly take a courtroom that's identified in your program and move it, now what happens to that potentially 2,000 square foot hole that we've created? We've got 2,000 square feet that's not being utilized for anything. So it's building utilization too. It's about efficiency, I think, also.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So we'll go through and modify this. We'll give you all some of this to chew on for a while. I see some serious cost implications to some of this remodel, and I see some operational inefficiencies of some of this, the way it's stacked in this as well, personally. And you still don't have, again, in a newer courts facility, I wish I'd brought a pad to sketch one, but in a newer courts facility, again, yeah, I'm not
going to. We've seen it in the.
But you've seen it from National Center of Courts, big courts. You keep the public to one side. The courts become that public judicial interaction. You've got a holding between the courts, and you've got staff security between that. So there's a clear separation. In every historic court facility that we've done for years, they're gorgeous facilities. You cannot create that same level of separation in these plans. It's just not going to happen. You can have a little bit of movement, but when that judge leaves his office, he's going right into the public hallways. When the staff need to utilize bathroom, unless we start adding bathrooms back here, they're going back in these public areas. The the separation of staff and public, it's a security risk, mm-hmm. Separate from the inmate as well. So again, these old buildings, because they don't create that ability without going in there, because again, this is a gorgeous building, but we're not going to touch that facade, which is north side. Mm-hmm. We're not going to touch the facade. We're not going to touch that gorgeous atrium centerpiece. They're all historic elements. The only thing we could potentially touch is goes back into these office areas. And in this plan, we would still need to add that secured vertical new element, because there's no good way, if I remember correctly, right now, coming from the north, there's a bunch of steps, there's a series of steps that comes up to get into the courthouse. From the back side, on the south side, it's an accessibility. I think you have one of those chair rail type deals that leads into it. So you have the accessibility. Again, if you're going to try to do court screening and scanning, it's almost impossible to try to make it work within this lobby with two entrance points and control where people come and go into the building. That's why the newer facilities have one element that people come into, they get screened and scanned, then they move into the facility. It's a much safer approach. The next option really starts to lay out really more the same jail footprint you saw in all the other plans. So again, it's the sheriff's operations area that we had already talked about. This is the same jail footprint, right, Julian, that we looked
really
at all the other.
Yeah, it's looking at it a different way.
Yep.
Yeah.
But it's the same footprint we looked at at the other similar
plans. Just configured differently.
Yeah. And just so you know, we haven't tucked it. Conceptually, we're not tucking it up right against the existing courthouse. Part of that's to be able to get windows and light into those other areas so that you're not creating dark, cavernous spaces on the opposite side. From a planning standpoint, it makes a lot more sense.
But you can see this one, we're not connecting the factors, like you said, because this concept, as you'll see in the next couple pages here, looks at this as the justice facility, right? Right, Bruce?
Yes. Yeah, so in this one, we're saying, okay, government services stay in the courthouse. They stay where the government services stay where they're at. And now in this option, we're really talking about accommodating the Justice Center and court, jail, or sheriff's operations and everything in one additional facility. As you can see from the footprint, in any of these options that we do with the existing courthouse, and even when we start to look at utilizing this space, we're still going to have very little parking on this site. That's going to be one of the cons of this. While we can maximize utilization of this existing building, of these existing buildings, potentially with all these options, in order to accommodate the long-term growth, which I think makes sense. You look at centers, the courts program, you look at the sheriff's operations program, all these, it's more space than what's currently there. So we're going to lose space on the site, which means we're not going to have parking. Well, if this becomes available, the county can acquire that or make some kind of agreement, and potentially the parking adjacent would satisfy some of that. So these are the plan layouts for that. And again, when you go to the page 617, I should say. Oops, 18. Thank you. So in this option, really all you're seeing is, in essence, that actually, I think we did shuffle some people around. So, again, while I said government services stayed in here, I think there's a confusion on some of this one. The trick here is that if we vacate all of court services out from the second floor, we're now creating an entire footprint of excess area. So I think the goal was to keep all the departments, like the ground level, the equalization office, the welfare office, maintenance, register of deeds, the nurses, veterans, those all stay pretty much where they're at. Now, the good and bad part is the good is they stay where they're at. The bad is they're not really provided with any long-term growth for those departments. They're kind of landlocked where they are potentially as well. So we're not really, that is some input that probably you need from some of those other departments. Are you really landlocked where you're at? Are they, are you, we've seen nursing and welfare offices, I hate to say it, throughout the Midwest grow because of the demand and the need. So the question would be, does that work for them? We are looking in this option too, is I think what we showed on this second level was the goal was to move other functions in here to, again, better utilize this. So we're showing the, it says clerk of courts, but that's wrong. I should say court services. Again.
Which, the second level?
Yeah. So it should say, this should say court services and state attorney's office. While they're still connected to this new addition for courts, again, it provides making sure we're repurposing that space and not just building more than we need to build, if that makes sense. American Legion stays where they're at. We're going to properly title that for American Legion. And then on the first floor, again, I think all of these are pretty much staying here. The only thing I question, and this says court services here, and I don't think that was, and the hearing room is there. I don't think.
Maybe that's clerk of courts.
Yeah, I need to go.
But the intent is at this level of court.
So what the problem is, Dwayne, is we haven't identified where some of the other county functions go. That's the only issue.
Yeah, I think that's...
You get the general idea, though. You're getting some court space in the old building.
Yep.
Some court and related space, and an addition to modernize the circulation.
Oh, that's why you did it. Okay, I take that back. So that's why we did it. The idea was that this was in this concept where this is where we talked about where your public circulation comes in here. Your attorney conference rooms are kind of along the front. Your courtrooms are here. Your court holding area, your inmate holding area is here. And you've got staff movement here, chambers and things back here to the backs of the courtrooms. The idea was to create one courts floor in this plan.
Just a question here. I'm looking on the second level, and you got the commission chambers quite a ways from the auditors. And currently they're right side by side, so it's real easy for the auditor to walk from the auditor's office into the commission chambers, you know, if they need leftover information or so on.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, it is, yeah. We have the auditor.
What I need to do is go back through this and just kind of verify. I thought we had all the spaces properly identified, but we want to make sure that, again, we had planned to keep most folks where they are with the idea of displacing and kind of infilling on the second floor where courts are. Or first level.
Okay, so.
I think the other thing to identify on the west side, you know, where there are windows, there are none now. So, I mean, if there are offices on the west side of the courthouse there.
You're losing the windows.
No, we could do what we did on the other one where we try to carve back to get some of that daylight in there. Just a flip. Problem with this one, though, is to make the area work, we're right against that sidewalk edge.
Yeah, you're now pushing upward.
So would we need a variance from the city to do that, probably?
To go against the sidewalk?
Yeah.
No. Based on the zoning in this area, it's a zero lot line, so you can build right up to the property line.
Just like a downtown type building?
Yeah. Okay. One of the things, too, as we go forward with some of these options, we will do some massing studies for you to help you get a picture. We did a courthouse some years ago, and the county's now looking at doing some expansion and modifications very similar to what you're looking at, but the size of what they need to construct is almost dwarfing the historic courthouse. So one of the concerns is, are we really bastardizing the quality of the building that we have? And that's something, I think aesthetic was part of your concerns.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And we need to understand what some of the massing is.
Yeah.
So we will do that as well.
Thanks.
Thank you.
So, Bruce, back to that concept for just a second.
Yes.
So, to clarify then, we were leaving all the existing government functions as is, not looking at, like in the previous concept, we were moving them out and addressing some future needs, which is a little caveat there.
Yep.
In this case, we wouldn't be.
So, existing government spaces, existing county government spaces are really as is.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
You may want to some extent, yeah, but I think state's attorney might be...
No. Not. We're not talking justice facilities. So justice facilities, we're programming and laying out based on the program, which is, again, going back to courts, judicials, clerk of courts, court services, state attorney. Those are all being laid out based on the long term, and that I see. Those okay. program projections were based on 2035.
Right, right. Anything in the NCSC.
We're talking about okay. really the treasurer's office. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All the auditor, all of those veteran services, all of those are okay. kind of area as is. So that'll be one of the cons to this option too, is we're providing long-term space requirements for the judicial system, just judicial facilities, not necessarily addressing long-term space requirements for some of the other departments.
So. We got a ways to go yet.
We should take a break.
Okay. Everybody okay with a break? Well, we do need to go through the public affairs or public awareness meeting. We're almost done with the site stuff.
There's only one. The real zone is only one left. And
do you want to just finish? Are we ready to go on the site?
And then we'll keep it very brief.
I was thinking about a break. I was thinking about a break too.
Yeah, this
is 8:40.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
So this was the new venture site. Go ahead, Dwayne. I'll shut up.
Yeah, this is the last site we were looking at today. Site 16 was the one that Lee mentioned was brought into our consideration last meeting.
Yeah, this was a call from a realtor. Just sounded nice and big, but then when we look at it from the It's right next to two hotels. It's zoned commercial 3, which I forgot what that meant, but I have a feeling.
Well, what it means here in this case is a height limit of 30 feet.
Oh, okay.
Which will be challenging.
Yeah.
You got road access issues.
You got a gravel pit right there.
Yeah, gravel pit. And, it's the annexation issue. We'll add some notes to it, but I think we're potentially taking this site out.
Yeah, I think if that's it for the sites. I would say if people are comfortable with it, I'm thinking we take this one off, and then also that the one north of the fire department. Do we can just do that by consent if we want to do? Does anybody happy with just doing that by consent? If we want to vote on that, then we should probably wait till next meeting.
So we'll
call it. So we're. So site 16 and the other number, Cindy, was 14 that we removed.
What's the fire department site?
The 14.
Okay.
That's north of the fire department.
And what did you call this one? The new venture?
New venture.
The addition?
Yeah. Yeah, the new venture additions.
All right.
Didn't like that. So. Okay. All right. So, you take a... 4.5-minute recess.
The only thing I was going to say is this is another facility we did. It starts to look at this idea of massing. And people that are familiar with the building, it starts to show when you start to do add-ons after add-ons adjacent to it, it starts to potentially overpower what a facility should be. So we'll show you some more diagrams after. I just want to kind of show you that information. Should I leave this up or should I turn you?
Well,
just in case we don't get back to anything?
Yeah, I was on the public. So now the next item on the agenda is the public presentation, just to understand that. And I kind of got your draft agenda mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. So it should be a draft agenda from the public presentation. And just so everybody's comfortable with what we're talking about, this is next week, a week from tonight, 6:30. I think I said 6:10 in a couple cases because I'm so used to 6:10. So, but it's 6:30 up in this area here in LA, right up there in the fourth level. And this is a suggestion that Bruce and company brought to us is that we're the key difference from this time as we start the public awareness part of it is we're starting much earlier in the process. So we're not waiting until just before the vote, and so we're getting people involved. To understand. So to some extent, this is going to be for those of us who've been looking at this problem for a long time, this is going to seem like a little bit obvious that, yeah, we know we have a problem. So this is a lot about the why, but it's also a little bit about the progress of what we've done so far. So
it helps bring everyone, it helps bring everybody up to speed and at least start from ground zero. Why has the county been looking at this? And you've got some great information that helps educate some people about what those issues have been.
Yeah. So what I think, so after we introduce everybody on the committee, if you can all make it, that's good. And everybody from BKV that's there, we'll have some introductions. Try to be as quick as we can about that. And then we talked about using videos. I have the five videos. They're each really quick. I have them done. They're kind of amateur, but the idea there is that we're not kind of talking over each other. We get our outline of what the points we want to make, and a video can capture a lot of information and communicate it pretty quickly. That's the idea. So I was going to show those to you, but why don't we just kind of do the agenda here real quick, and if anybody has any observations, and you've done this a lot before, Bruce, so any comments. But I was going to go through the videos, kind of show the why we're doing what we're doing, and then it ends with the point about criteria that the county approved. And so that's kind of the way ahead. Once we have all the why, we have the input from the consultants, the architect that help us establish our criteria, and off we go. And then after we take maybe just a very limited amount of questions while we're showing the videos, we turn it over. We don't want to go for very long on the questions, and then turn it over to you and talk about the next steps, kind of updating people on the process that we're going through right now, what's likely to happen next, and then we open it up for questions at the end for about 30 minutes. So does that sound okay to everybody?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So in that slide, I think in next steps, if it's acceptable to everybody, we probably have one slide that identifies all these potential sites,
mm-hmm.
just to an overview of these potential options. One thing to also think about in the agenda, too, is how to get input from the community. So the ones that are comfortable speaking out in public will say something. Others that aren't necessarily as comfortable speaking in public might not say anything. So the question will be for that, is there, can they email? What are the other communications?
What have you seen done?
Well, we've seen a couple. We've seen comment cards. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but you let everybody know there's comment cards. You do like a voting box, if you will, so people can do them anonymously. They can write on there. We've gone to we've gone to public town hall kind of meetings where we will have comment cards, a little postcard kind of deal, have pens out there, and tell everybody, we really want to hear your input. We be glad to know what's going on.
Yeah.
We also, a lot of times, will be here ahead of time to answer questions as people are coming in, just to introduce ourselves and if you have any questions. You know, it helps to kind of phase people into it.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing is how do you get those thoughts back from everybody that might show up? Give them the opportunity to speak. Sometimes you have to control it a little bit. You might have somebody that wants to dominate every piece of it, so there has to be kind of a narrator or organizer that, thank you for that information. But to be fair to everybody, because if you get a room that's full, say we'd like to keep it to 30 seconds to 40 seconds of your thoughts, we'll try to answer it, and then we'll go into the next one. But again, that depends on how many people show up, for organizational.
Yeah, and I have no idea what kind of turnout we're going to get. I've been advertising it as much as I can, so thanks for your help, Megan, on that. And got on the radio a couple times, but it's been the paper helped us out. They did a public service announcement, so we'll see. And inviting so we want open-minded people to show up. And
who are you going to have moderated?
That was I was thinking I was going to do that. Do you think you want to do it?
I do not want to do it.
How do you feel about that one?
I can nominate her.
But you didn't say you wouldn't.
Okay, I mean, if you have somebody in mind.
You didn't say you would.
I think it's important that you have somebody that can control that. We found definitely in a lot of those forums that people like to get grabby with the mic, and then it all of a sudden turns more from a question into a statement, and then...
I haven't really thought of it, but that's one thing I didn't think about. So getting like somebody from the paper or somebody like that, or
there's a host of people that we use. Mike Tanner from the radio station is fantastic. David Jay is fantastic. Roger Whittle from the Public Opinion, or Mark Roby. Any of those people know how to work in that, and they're fact finders, so they're good at differentiating between an opinion and a statement.
Okay. I'll ask them.
I assume you have a portable mic.
Yeah, they have a pretty good setup here. Okay. And so, okay. I can approach them. If not, then I guess we're stuck with me. But particularly for the Q&A, it'd be good to hand it off to them, I think. So
one of the other things we have done is had a sign-up
So if somebody wants to come to the microphone, it avoids the dominant person. You have a clipboard with a sign-up sheet there. So if people would like to speak, you announce it ahead of time. They can put their name on there. So if Bruce goes up, at that point, the moderator can say, you know, thank you, Bruce, and either turn the mic off and move to the next person so that each person gets their spare time. That's a big thing.
The only thing about that is that's what they do for the zoning meetings, which works well because people are usually familiar with the issue ahead of time. But there's something that might come up as they're listening to, but they would want to ask a question, I wish I would have signed up for that. So, but
you know, and something like that, as long as you've gone through everybody, and I think if you laid the ground rules, let's get everybody through the first time, and then if you have a follow-up question, you know, raise your hand, we'll address it.
Yeah.
But it's really unfair for number 28 wanting to say something when the other 27 have dominated the time. And then
okay.
You get that energy going in the crowd that's not a really positive energy because they're anticipated.
And depending upon the number, you might have to say we're going to limit everybody's question to, you know, really keep it to a 30-second kind of what your question. We'll make sure we answer, and then we need to go on. It depends on how many people you actually show up.
Okay.
Who do you want there for the courts? That's kind of what I was thinking. It'd be nice if all three of the judges here
would be great.
Be here.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll have to ask Don. Yeah. I mean, I assume Bob will be here.
I think
we'll make a point of introducing you, and then any commissioners that are there will introduce.
From an attendance standpoint, the committee, the commissioners, the user group like the judges, like the sheriff's operations, I mean, in our opinion, it's important to have those folks there because we can talk about planning and certain requirements, but there's clearly operational issues that you all deal with that really, a lot of times, you're better to address those.
Yeah.
Okay.
So any other comments on the flow of the overall flow of the meeting?
I think what we'd like to do, Lee, is we'll get all the, and I think we've got all these clips electronically, because we'd probably like to compile it into one continuous so we're not having to switch over, because we'll put together some boards that talk about these kind of next steps and what we're
you
doing.
Mean the clips of the videos?
No. Our next slides. So
okay.
We'll have some slides that follow the videos, that next section.
Yeah, okay.
So rather than switching machines, maybe we combine it into one PowerPoint.
Yeah,
that works.
I wasn't going to. By the way, this handout is. These are the slides that go with the videos, and they're just there in case somebody has a question, like about a graph or something. You know that, or can I see that diagram again in case we want to answer a question using that? But that's you can.
We can have these, some of that as a supplemental information, and then go back to it if there's a question. We can. That's a good thing, having it all in one kind of presentation as well.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a question, we can scroll back to it and say,
right.
Well, this one.
So this is we can put these slides
we'll
with your slides.
These.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
And then what do folks think about handouts? You know, I like using the website because it's a little easier, but there are folks that seem to, that don't use the internet that much, that might come, and you probably see them a lot in the auditor's office. People that don't use the internet that much, so we might want to.
We've heard it go both ways. To be quite honest with you, we've heard it go both ways. We'd have some presentation where some clients have felt like we're going to present it. It's going to be available on the internet. If somebody really needs a copy, they can let us know and we will send them one. We've had others that have put copies out there. Either way, all this information is being shared, has been on the internet, will be on the internet, will be on the county's website.
Yep.
So
okay.
It's a toss-up. It's whatever you all think makes the most sense.
Okay.
Has the county ever done a request for mailing? I mean, if somebody says, I'd like a copy of the PowerPoint or like a copy of the thing and then you print it out. One of the things that I run into a lot when we do a public meeting, they burn off 100 sets of things that are out there, and you got 85 of them at the end of the meeting, and you're like, okay, we just, you know, we got two reams of paper later that we burnt up in ink and time and somebody putting all this together, you know.
People do come to the auditor's office asking for things.
I mean, to date, nobody has asked for a large mailing, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But if somebody comes in and wants something, we will send it to them.
Okay. I mean, I think
we'll
that being
we'll
stewards of, you know,
time,
it's just nice if somebody says, yes, I would like a copy of what they did.
Yeah.
Make it, send it off, and you're done.
I'll err on the side of no handouts.
They would have to pay for that one,
don't they?
sometimes I'm just hesitant about I realize they couldn't make it to the meeting, but to me it almost seems like it should be a county service to provide that to them.
Well, the reason I ask is the last time we did this, when we did the handouts, the pamphlets,
there was no county funding.
We did fundraising to raise the funds.
To me, this is not the same thing right now. We're not promoting it. We're providing information on what we need to do. It's not like that. We're not a promoting point, in my opinion, right now, but that's my opinion.
And we're not spending any extra money, really, other than we are printing up meeting stuff, you know.
If we were promoting something and saying, please vote yes on this, then the money thing would come into play. But we're presenting information. We're making information available to the voters and taxpayers so they can make an educated decision if it comes to that.
Also on the pub meeting, there's a handout with FAQs. These are things that I think most of us have probably heard, you know, in the community and stuff. Did you get it?
This one?
No, this one. That one there. You sat next to me, so you get all of this right.
So how is this information going to be shared?
Well, this is more down the road, I think. Somebody might ask a question like this during the meeting, but this is more down the road stuff that we've heard. So this is not necessarily for this public. It's public awareness in general, but not necessarily for this public presentation. So these are some rough answers that I worked up. The sheriff gave me a hand with some of them. Some of them might be a little long-winded at this point, and this is more so we kind of, you know, have our ducks in order, have just thought about it, because we hear these questions, and so, and some of this is a work in progress, and if people hear other questions, you know, frequently enough to where they're in FAQ, then let's put it down, and eventually, what I'd like to do is have on our website a spot where here's your FAQ. Have a succinct kind of answer. It might link to one of these videos if it happens to be the answer to that question, so, or something else. So, so we have the answers ready. And you know, there are some things we heard over and over again. So, and some of them were good questions. Some were just honest questions that people, you know, voters ask when they spend money. You know, that you know, it might have seemed like stuff that, you know, very obvious to us because we're close to the process, but there are things at the same time that people wonder about. So, anyway, any other things? I'll show the videos, and then then we can adjourn. If anybody doesn't want to stay, yeah, anybody need to go? It's probably about 16 minutes worth of video altogether.
And I do, if I could, jump in there. One question. So, or one thing, just to let everybody know where we're heading, kind of all of you for some of these next steps. Our next meeting that we have identified after the public hearing is July 26th, is what we've got on the schedule right now. We're going to come back, and again, you're going to get it ahead of time. We're going to get refinements to these plans, more information. We're also going to be starting to look at operational impacts. So what are the operational impacts? And Judge, like I said, we're going to be sending questions to Lee so he can coordinate with you. How many times do you think people are moving back and forth? Because from an operational standpoint, it's the cost to heat and cool a building. It's the cost to maintain a building. But the biggest operational impact is your staffing. How efficient are they at what they do? Are they losing hours of job time by running back and forth? And what's the cost to do that? So that's really a lot of the operational analysis, and that we need to pull that together.
Yeah.
We'll be adding pros and cons to these various sites again. So you'll look at that as well. So that's what we're planning for the 26th. When we come around to our next meeting, which is September 20th, that's when we're going to start to put these estimates to the sites. So now we've flushed out some of these operational impacts with all the sites. We've refined them a little bit more. We're going to put the cost analysis to those, and we'll talk about the cost of where we think things are. Can it be phased? Is it all done at once? What's the difference from one versus the other? What are the property costs? Will all that have that? And then finally, in the October 25th meeting, that's when we'll roll those tax analysis, and I think we talked a little bit, I'm sorry, the cost estimate, into a tax analysis. What does that mean to the citizens of the community? What is one versus the other? What is that long range? Is it a 20-year bond? Is it a 30-year bond? Where is that at? And what will be tied to that a little bit, too, would be a potential schedule, as well as, I think, our recommendation
at that point in time of what we see.
I'm sorry, Bruce, what did you say was going to be the, you were talking about the operational cost analysis, was that the...
So the operational analysis, the operational impact is the July 26th vote. Cost estimating September, tax impact analysis or tax analysis schedule and recommendation on that October 25th. And then following that, really it's compiling a report, and then we had identified a couple public presentations, I think, early December and kind of late January.
So I think then this is about the only moment we can do a public presentation before the general election in November. Just let that go away. I'm starting to hear once in a while, like, what's going on with that Justice Center bunch of guys? Because we're not supposed to say Justice Center.
Justice Facility.
But, yeah. But anyway, let me show these. Does anybody need to leave?
There's your vote.
I'm holding you to it.
Oh.
I'm
dead.
It's a little bit.
Cuttington County's current courthouse was dedicated and opened in 1929. The current jail was built about 45 years later, in 1974. Throughout the history of both buildings, the workload steadily increased over time. With these increases in caseload and jail population, there was steady need for more space and more security measures. As a result, in 1993, the court requested an assessment of the courthouse from the U.S. Marshals Service. In this assessment, the marshals highlighted the security problems of the courthouse. To deal with space problems on the jail side, in 1998, the county built an addition to the jail. In 2002, the court requested that the county engage an architect or engineer to come up with a solution to address the overcrowding caused by the heavy court caseload. In 2006, the temporary committee of officials and citizens determined that the courthouse and jail were inadequate. They recommended that the county study the problem to determine a solution. In 2013, the county hired the firm of Architecture Incorporated of Sioux Falls to develop an option to address the courthouse and jail problems. By late summer 2014, Architecture Incorporated developed an option for a justice center with an estimated price of $35 million. In November 2014, however, the ballot measure, which would have approved the funding, failed. Since the county is bound by state law to deal with courthouse and jail problems, the county created the Cuttington County Justice Advisory Committee, or CCJAC. The CCJAC has 7 voting members, 3 of which are county officials. The other 4 are from throughout the county and from various walks of life. They were tasked with finding options to address these facility problems. Based on the recommendations of the CCJAC, the county obtained technical assistance from the National Center for State Courts, or NCSC. The NCSC projected the growth in caseload 20 years into the future and recommended an appropriate amount of court floor space. For the jail, CCJAC recommended an assessment from jail consultant Bill Garnos. Mr. Garnos projected likely growth in inmate population and provided a detailed analysis of the current jail. With the analytical work of the court and jail consultants, the CCJAC was able to recommend criteria. These criteria describe factors that must be considered, like cost and expandability. The county commissioners approved these criteria in January of 2016. Also in early 2016, the county issued a request for proposals, or RFP, to find an architect to assist in developing options for renovation, adaptation of current structures, or construction. After reviewing proposals from 10 architectural firms, the county accepted the proposal of BKB Architects of Minneapolis in March 2016. If project funding is secured, the county has the option to retain BKB for subsequent phases of the project. Using the work done by the court and jail consultants, BKB is working with CCJAC to develop viable conceptual options.
Sorry, it's kind of quiet. It's just computer speakers. So everybody, I'm sorry, it's quiet. Hopefully people can hear. So this is the order I was thinking we could show.
One
the primary problems with the courthouse is the lack of secure and separate routes to the courtrooms.
The witnesses and the lawyers and the general public all interacting and not having a space where they can go to separate themselves during these emotionally charged times really affects the integrity of the system.
Participants in the court process, to include plaintiffs, defendants, lawyers, and witnesses, jury members, and inmates, must move to the court through public spaces.
The current structure of the courthouse doesn't allow for the separation of inmates or witnesses. A lot of times there are 15 to 20 inmates that are brought over amongst the general public into a courtroom that's not secure. There was an issue last week where another inmate assaulted another inmate sitting in the jury box waiting for court to start. In the last 6 months, we've had two very emotionally charged child sexual abuse jury trials going on, whether it's a custody matter or a very serious criminal matter. People are emotionally invested in what's going on. Sometimes you have children who need to be able to testify, and there's no place for a child to go to have a space where they're not seeing the perpetrator, seeing their perpetrator's family, so that affects their ability to come in then in front of the court and talk about what happened. That it's very difficult to have witnesses feel safe and secure when they're constantly not being able to be separated from the other side.
In addition to lacking functionality for modern security needs, the current court caseload is overwhelming the available space. Since the courthouse opened in 1929, the annual number of cases grew from 40 to over 1,700 in 2013. This is only counting felonies, Class 1 misdemeanors, and civil cases.
Mentioned there are thousands of cases that are dealt with. There are only two courtrooms in this building, and there are three judges. The unified judicial system has had to hire more probation officers. The clerk of courts needs more staff as well. The state's attorney's office is very crowded. We continue to need more people to adequately deal with our caseloads, but we don't have the space to address that.
To help the county better understand this problem, the National Center for State Courts, or NCSC, provided technical assistance in the form of a courthouse space assessment. The NCSC recommended that the Cottington County Courthouse be divided into circulation zones, a public zone, an interface zone, and a private judicial zone. There should also be secure circulation routes for moving inmates to and from the courtroom. As part of the Cottington County Courthouse space assessment, NCSC projected the likely court caseload 20 years in the future. NCSC then applied modern standards and best practices to these projections and made specific court space recommendations. At present, there is just over 13,000 square feet in the courthouse dedicated to the justice system. If the courthouse had the appropriate space for today's caseload, it should have just over 27,000 square feet. Accounting for projections 20 years from now, another 805 square feet should be added for a total of 28,236 square feet. Updating the courthouse to make it effective for today's needs is key to our system of justice.
To save time, I'll skip the jail one. It's pretty close to what we saw last week, and I'll show it at the end for anybody who wants to stay and see it. That's okay. So it was going to go like a timeline one, court one, jail one. So that's kind of the why. And then this one about, you said, remember the one about the laws, the law books have been before your different laws? I showed that one last time, so I'll show that at the end too.
And the only other one, the other new one, is about the criteria.
So this one. Criteria are the set of requirements for our justice facilities. During 2015, the Cottington County Justice Advisory Committee, or CCJAC, developed a set of criteria using expert input and public comment. The county commissioners approved the criteria in early 2016. By setting the criteria before developing specific options to solve courthouse and jail problems, we can evaluate renovation or construction ideas more objectively. There are 10 criteria for evaluating options to address our facility needs.
They're organized in four levels of importance. The highest level of importance is the must-do level. If an option doesn't meet one or more of these criteria, it is out of the running. The first must-do criterion is that an option must have the basic design features and enough space for the facility to last at least 20 years. The next must-do criterion is that the option must have some kind of strategy for expandability of the facility. This is to make possible future facility expansion a less costly process. The third must-do criterion is that an option must preserve the rotunda and north facade of the courthouse. The next three levels of criteria allow us to compare options that meet the must-do criteria. These comparative criteria are organized in first, second, and third priorities. At the first priority level, we have operational cost. This is the cost to operate and maintain the proposed facility. Next, we need to compare how well proposed options will allow the court and jail to work. This criterion looks at things like maximizing observation of inmates. Also under the first priority is the relative ease or difficulty of a possible future facility enlargement. Next, at the second priority level, we have project cost. This is the upfront cost of designing, building, and furnishing a proposed facility. Also at the priority 2 level is a criterion to consider how adaptable a facility is for such things as future technological changes. At the priority 3 level is a criterion to ensure that the facility has an appearance that conveys the value our citizens place on justice. Also, in the priority 3 level is a criterion to compare how much judicial and county business each option will keep in Watertown's downtown area. These criteria express what we need and desire for our future justice facilities. You can review them in other CCJAC work on the Coddington County Justice Advisory Committee's webpage. It is accessible from the county website, coddington.org.
If you guys want to go on, if you want to wait around, I'll show the other two for those that didn't see them. You can review. I was going to do that after we adjourned.
These are excellent videos. I'll tell you, we've done a lot of public presentation. We were very, very good.
Thanks. So, any old business? Any other? Well, I should say, any other questions on the public awareness stuff before we move on? Okay. Any old business? New business. The only item I was going to mention for the open was: is this room okay for people? I kind of like this room better than the last one we were in. It's a little bit better, I think, for everybody. So, for this kind of thing, and then again for next week, we're going to be up on the fourth level. Any other items for the open? Okay, then I'd entertain a motion to adjourn. Moved by Commissioner McMahoney, seconded by Mr. Endres. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. We are adjourned. Thank you.